Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
Sure.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan. You know what we need to do?
Wait, Jordan.
We need to get a third person here named Jor.
Yeah.
We have Jor, Dan, and Jordan.
No, we don't.
Who is
named Jor?
I don't know. We could find Jor-El.
Jor-El? Okay, fine. Yeah. We're getting Superman's dad into this whole show.
The perfect trio. That's my question.
Jor-El, Dan, and Jordan.
L.
L. Yes, yeah. Let's just add L to both of our names. Dan L and Jordan L, and we'll call it even.
Sounds like a good plan.
I like it. Welcome to Knowledge Fight with Dan L and Jordan L.
To be fair, my name is Daniel. That's real close.
God damn it. It is real close.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
All right.
Let's cancel this show.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Absolutely.
What's up?
Dan.
What?
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been to a classic old-timey carnival kind of situation? You know, the kind where you walk through and there's a bearded lady. That kind of like the...
With the sideshow kind
of...
Not like the
carnival that rides on the cars and shows up in your town. I'm talking like the dirty carnival.
No, absolutely not. My parents would never have taken me to one of those things. And after I was of the age where I might go by myself, I don't think I would have chosen to go to one. No way. I've been to like Christian extremist haunted houses, which
are very similar.
I've been to monster truck rallies.
Yeah.
I've been to...
You've been to a monster truck rally?
Fuck yeah. I grew up in central Missouri.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you go to a monster... Maybe it does. I had some friends
who just like to go to places where it was easier to drink.
Right. Well,
and monster truck rallies are right up there.
Yeah,
especially in the middle of... Out at like Mexico, Missouri, you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, it was one of the craziest things. Because I had a group of friends, like my main core group of friends weren't really what you'd call like... They weren't the more rural types.
They weren't country monster truck people.
Country music listeners, yes. People who would be unironically at the monster truck rally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I did work at a Subway for a little while with a guy named Moose. And,
of course you did. You grew up in Central Missouri.
Sure. And I used to go to a karaoke bar, pretty regularly that was on the outskirts of town, like right at the city limits.
Oh yeah.
Called Peppers. There was a guy who would go there named L.A. Monte, who was also quite
okay.
Country.
Okay.
He was great. He was the person who first introduced me to Clarence Carter's song, Strokin'.
Okay.
He had great version of it.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
So I had these friends that I knew. They weren't super close, but, you know, they were acquaintances that were very on good friendly terms.
Right.
To give you some context, Moose would always call me Baby Boy.
Okay.
Which I never knew how to take.
Okay.
So I went to the monster truck rally with some buddies, and, you know, we're just out there drinking, and I run into Moose, who's out there for the monster truck rally.
Yes, of course.
And everyone's like, Dan, how do you know that guy? And I'm like, it's my buddy Moose. What are you talking about? And then like half an hour later, I run into L.A. Monte, give him a nice big hug.
So it's like a weird Revenge of the Nerds situation where you've got your friends on one side and then the jocks on the other side. You're the fucking Romeo and Juliet betwixt the two.
There was no tension or anything like that, but there was just like this sense of like, Dan, how many people do you know? It was amazing. It felt really good. And the monster truck rally was pretty, I mean, it was all right. It gets really boring after a while.
How could it not?
Because I apologize. When we showed up, it was for the part of it that was the demolition derby.
Yeah.
And so it was just cars running into each other until they all stopped.
Right.
And that is, it sounds like it would be really interesting.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. I've watched those, on TV on like ESPN Classic. I've gotten way too high and watched those. And it's like, they're even then, like I can count my intellect by how many hours I stayed watching it, you know?
It slows
45
down.
Minutes and you stop and you're like, oh yeah, I'm all right. I'm not a bad guy. But if you're there for the whole time, There's some questions.
I can kind of understand, especially, like, I actually can't really fully understand the entertainment value of it. Because at the beginning, it's pretty exciting because all the cars are really functional.
And they're fast, and they hit each other hard. Yeah. And then as it peters out, you're like, what are we doing?
Slowly backing into each other. Like, I guess you got to stick with it and see who wins, but I just don't. I don't know. It's not for me, but I respect everybody and their entertainment choices.
The only word I can think of for the cars near the end is flaccid. That's the word I can think of.
Impotent.
Yeah.
So this is a podcast where I've been to a demolition derby and I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I have never been to a demolition derby and I don't know anything about Alex Jones.
That is correct. So Jordan, today what we're going to be doing is we're going to be going into the present day business. We're going to be We're going to be going over September 29th and 30th, which is Sunday and Monday of this week. And I think we're going to see some real upsetting things.
Yeah, no, has anything interesting happened on those couple days?
A few things.
Any news?
A few things have happened. We might have had a president of our country tweet about a civil war.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which is maybe a little too on brand for Alex. And we'll see how he responds to that. But before we get to that, we got to take a moment, say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show. First of all, Juan John Joan. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Juan John Joan. Next, Lazy Egglet. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Lazy Egglet. Next, Elizabeth. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Next, Greg. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Greg.
Next, Alexander. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Alexander. Next, Skyler. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Skyler.
And finally, I'd like to say thank you to a couple of people who have signed up on an elevated level. We appreciate it very much. So first of all, Pathogen Inc., thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And also Patrick, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right?
Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large.
I declare InfoWar on you.
Thank you so much, Pathogen Inc. and Patrick. Yes. Also, both are kind of relevant in some ways. First of all, it's Pathogen Inc., I-N-K. And I should tell the good people out there, because there have been some people who have been curious, and it's been a little bit delayed. I am getting the tattoo this week. The show tattoo will be gotten.
It's happening.
We reached that level of donations a little while back, but the design was still being put together. But that is all completed, and I might even go after the show, quite frankly.
I think that's a great idea.
You want to come?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm not going after the show.
I gotta feed my dogs.
Hey, dogs are fine. Your dogs are chubby.
It's gonna be at least an hour tattoo.
Your dogs are chubby.
My dogs are chubby.
They'll live.
You son of a bitch.
It'll eat the fat from within. It'll be good for them.
That doesn't make sense at all.
Makes total sense.
Okay.
And then, Patrick, sent a message and he would like to challenge us, to go through this episode without me saying "be that as it may,"
okay,
and you are not allowed to say "I don't understand" sarcastically.
Okay.
So we'll try to do that.
I don't understand.
Be that as it may.
Okay.
We will try our best to. We'll see if that works out. I make no promises. So the 29th and 30th is what we're going to be going over. But first, here is an out of context drop from today's show.
Piss on Satan.
No.
All right.
Don't do that.
No. I'm fine with it.
Satan likes it.
He both likes and dislikes it.
Right. So we start here on the 29th, and as I got in and jumped into this episode, I saw some stuff that I thought was going to be a bad sign. On the 29th, Alex begins with a little bit of motivation behind him, and I didn't know how it was going to manifest. And when I first heard it, I thought, this is not good.
The more we keep putting up with it, like they're the authorities and they're the bosses, the worse it's going to get, because we're in this stalemate now where most people don't believe them and hate the establishment, but they're still in charge, except populists are getting elected everywhere, so now they're taking over our elections, speeding up election fraud, speeding up intimidation, bullying, and we're on a collision course. So I'm going to talk at the bottom of the hour, believe me, you want to be here, about how we defeat this and how we stop this. And I have a plan. And there's an article up on InfoWars.com that deals with all of this. And we've proven we know how to take action. And you know how to take action and stop these globalists. But It's going to have to be in the streets. We've got to hit the streets in a big, meaningful, aggressive way. This is why they wanted us off air ahead of 2020, because they don't want us as the modern Paul Revere's to raise the alarm. The president has said, we'll play the clips again. I played them at the start. You may have missed them. That we're in a war. Who are we at war with, though?
Oh, that's not good.
And that these people are evil and want to overthrow the country because Trump represents the people in our best interest. That's coming up.
So that I found, as you did as well.
Oh, unsettling. That's troubling. That's no good.
It's a rare day that Alex has a plan.
Yeah.
So that made me worried, first of all.
Yep.
Second of all, taking it to the streets is only okay when it's coming from the Doobie Brothers.
Absolutely.
And then third of all.
Also the school from Fame. They too can take it to the streets.
That's fine.
Yes.
And then the aggressive. We gotta get aggressive,
It
to the streets.
No.
When I heard that, I was like, is Alex gonna fucking jump? Is he making that, rhetorical move?
Is this the move? Is this the day that we declare war?
I wasn't sure, and so I was interested to see where the progression took it, because he's also teasing it. He's also being like, we're going to talk about it next hour.
Yeah.
Keep eyes on the program and what have you. And as the show is in the early stages, this is really all he's saying.
You want solutions? You're going to get them. You want marching orders? You're going to get them.
Yeah, I've got solutions.
Whoa, that's no good.
And I've got marching orders.
He never has either of those, Dan. We're fucked.
Yeah, it's bad news.
That's no good.
No. So he doesn't get to this right away because, again, like I said, he's trying to tease this out to keep eyes on the program. And so he starts complaining about, you know, how much he loves Trump, but there's things that he wishes Trump would do better on.
And when you've got a president at the Rose Garden saying, I'm representing you and your interests, so they're coming after me, but I'm not going to back down. That's a pledge that he's been keeping. I just wish he'd do more about the censorship, because it's not about private companies. It's about combines spying on people and punishing people for what they do and what they say, and then lying about the fact that they're doing it, and election meddling, and only putting negative search results up for conservative candidates, rigging the searches. It's all admitted. Steven Crowder finally figured it's happening to him. It's been happening to him for 6 months. I told him. He'd type in his name, wouldn't get any of his stuff. He bitched about it. They stopped it. We've got to get aggressive. Kissing the left's ass has encouraged all this behavior.
So Alex seems to be like, his chief complaint is like, Trump hasn't got me back on Twitter yet.
Yeah, that one was very obvious.
It seems to be that's what's sticking in his craw.
That's his solution.
Well, and also, I mean, Stefan Molyneux just put out a video where he's talking about how, like, the deplatforming and stuff that he's experienced has led to, like, a disruption of the inflow of people, and that's critically hurt his ability to make money on his hustle.
Yay!
Well, but it's exactly, you know, basically what I've been talking about with Alex's business model and why it's a failure.
Yeah,
you need
to
constantly trick new people.
Blood in, blood out.
Yeah, more or less. And it's interesting to hear Stefan Molyneux really, like, lay that out and be like, this is what's happening.
I do like
it. I don't have new people coming in.
Yeah.
People are leaving.
I do. Like, I do right. like that. Yeah. He should not have done that.
Well, I wanted to actually do an entire episode about that video that he made, but I realized, like, we don't talk about him a bunch. It's kind of pointless.
And I hate listening to his voice.
Yeah.
It makes me want to vomit.
But that's one of the values of this. Like, if companies don't want to support and allow these people to game their algorithms in order to get more attention on their bullshit, this is pretty, I mean, you see a pretty good case that this does work. It works pretty well.
Yeah.
With Molyneux and Milo particularly, like, they have they've been very public about how much it works in terms of disrupting their ability to indoctrinate people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Your parasites and removing you is making you worthless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like it.
And so Alex is now talking about how Steven Crowder has realized that this is, he's the victim of shadow banning or whatever.
Which asshole is Crowder again?
So Steven Crowder of the show Louder with Crowder.
No.
Is a disaster.
People listen to a guy who's got a show named Louder with Crowder.
Kids do.
Oh, man.
He theoretically started his career aspiring to do comedy, but he is also very quickly realized the power of right-wing media in terms of taking shortcuts to popularity.
Right. And he's not funny.
From 2000 to 2012, he has a number of small roles that he's credited with in various TV and movie projects.
He did Chowder with Crowder.
He did a voice on the cartoon Arthur. He played Party Kid in the 2006 movie The Covenant.
Okay. And that was a good movie.
And he played Classroom Boy in the 2007 fucked up David Duchovny movie The Secret, where David Duchovny's dead wife's soul takes over his daughter's body, and most of the film is sexual tension between a father and daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have never heard of that one.
Steven Crowder, small role.
Can't imagine David Duchovny doing that. He has a spotless track record.
He's not a weirdo. So good on Steve for landing any roles at all. Some people don't even make it that far in show business. I wouldn't take that away from him. I'm not interested in kicking down on him because he played Classroom Boy.
Oh, hell no.
I don't give a shit. I couldn't do that, probably.
I'm not getting Classroom Boy anytime soon.
But if you really take a look at how things were going for him, his career as an actor was dead on arrival. If over the course of 12 years you aren't really able to get any juice, any momentum going, it's probably an indication that you aren't really cut out to act. Steven probably realized that that was the case because in 2009 he embarked on a new career, one of being a low-level functionary in the right-wing media. He was an MC at the CPAC in 2011, presumably because he was one of the only people they could find who had any kind of performance experience.
Yeah.
To give you a reminder that Trump is just part of the problem, here's a list of some of the speakers at CPAC 2011.
Let's hear the good ones.
Michelle Bachmann.
Hey!
Mitch McConnell.
What?
Newt Gingrich.
Amazing.
Steve King.
Okay.
Chris Kobach.
Bring it on.
Foster Freeze.
I don't know who Foster Freeze is.
He's a billionaire donor guy.
Oh, okay. Cut his dick off.
He was giving an intro speech for Rick Santorum.
God damn it. Cut his dick off too.
Dana Loesch.
All right.
Ted Cruz.
Bummer.
Wayne LaPierre.
Ugh.
Ron Paul. Rand Paul.
Okay.
Tucker Carlson. Paul Ryan, Donald Rumsfeld.
How can you even fit that many speeches in a fucking
Because
thing?
It's like over the course of a couple of days. They have like little workshops
but
and shit.
But they all have nothing to say.
Pamela Geller.
Okay.
Robert Spencer
great.
Of Jihad Watch.
Sarah Michelle Geller.
Ann Coulter. Phyllis Schlafly. John Bolton.
Jesus.
And Stephen Baldwin.
That is a... what?
Yeah.
Okay.
The GOP's had already lost its way in 2011. Yeah. Pretending otherwise is silly. Crowder produced videos that would be aired on Fox News during this period, and a couple years later, he really made his mark with a particularly distasteful report that he filed. In December 2012, Crowder was in attendance at a Michigan Right to Work rally, where he was on video mixing it up with a bunch of union protesters. A lot of the window dressing for his reports and all this stuff is really unimportant, so I'm just going to cut to the chase. Steven ended up getting punched by one of the union guys and immediately started parading the video around right-wing media, making appearances on Hannity, with his video becoming a fixture of Fox News in that news cycle. This clearly demonstrated that union protesters are violent and painted them in a completely negative light, and in effect demonized the cause that they were out there protesting for. Crowder challenged the union guy who punched him to a fight, and he was well on his way to becoming a new shining star in the right-wing media landscape.
It should take more than that.
And then it came out that the tape he'd been showing, which showed him being sucker-punched out of nowhere by this union guy, was manipulatively edited.
No!
The version that backs up Crowder's story specifically cuts out a part where someone knocks the union guy to the ground, and when he gets up, he hits Crowder, clearly acting in self-defense. The guy had been attacked, and it's unclear by whom, because the camera isn't focused on the right spot, but the important thing is that this wasn't an unprovoked attack, as Crowder had been portraying it. Along with all the right-wing media.
I'm sure that they then issued a correction and the
You'd
Fox
be surprised
News spent
to hear
a whole...
That
no,
they did not.
No, they did a whole 24-hour news cycle on how they got stuff wrong,
yeah.
Right? That's what the right-wing...
They did not.
Oh,
did
okay.
No mea culpa. Well, maybe someone did. I imagine maybe someone retracted, but...
Yeah, maybe.
After this, Steven didn't need to take roles like Classroom Boy anymore, and he's been working the right-wing grift ever since. He started his show Louder with Crowder in 2015, and since then, he's done his fake, edgy comedy bullshit shtick quite successfully. By making his content incredibly stupid, but also sophomorically offensive, he's able to Trojan horse conservative talking points into content that's super attractive to teens, which is really the place that he lives in the marketplace of ideas. It's the only reason he's a worthwhile commodity to the right and why he's part of Glenn Beck's network, The Blaze, now.
So he makes videos that teens with their unformed brains watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tailored at youth.
How? What?
Well, I mean, if you watch that as an adult, it's embarrassing.
What, does he get gack on there? What is going on?
He might as well.
Yeah.
He might as well be a Nickelodeon that's
really, a
wholesaler for conservative
Jesus
ideas.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Over the years, his guests have run the gamut from shithead conservative types to dangerous radicals. Noted overt anti-Semite Owen Benjamin used to be a regular on his show, but has since come out against him. In his YouTube videos, sometimes Benjamin will take a break from blaming Jews for everything that happens in the world to accuse Crowder of being gay, possibly with his assistant, who goes by the name Not Gay Jared. That's kind of the level of humor we're talking about here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I went back through his podcast section on his website, and you might be surprised to find out that the second post in that section on his website is titled, quote, "Moderate Islam is a myth. Here's why."
That was number two.
Yeah.
You got to ramp up to that
so
one,
so you can kind
of
tell that from the jump, his podcast has been a real pile of shit.
Yeah.
Pretty early on, he starts to have the sort of guests that, you know, kind of have a natural connection to his lane of propaganda.
Right.
People like James O'Keefe, Paul Joseph Watson, Gavin McGinnis, Milo Yiannopoulos, Sargon of Akkad, who appeared on his show originally as an expert in Gamergate.
Sometimes I think about counting the names of people that we talk about.
Uh-huh.
It's not a lot of good names on that list.
Nope.
We got a long list of assholes.
Dave Rubin,
Jesus.
Lauren Southern,
God
Ben Shapiro,
it.
Kurt Schilling, Tommy Robinson, Dinesh D'Souza, Stefan Molyneux, Blair White, and of course, Owen Benjamin. This is a show that's tailored towards the youth, and the idea that you would have someone like Stefan Molyneux on a show whose demo is under 18, that should be a crime. You're enabling a psychopath to prey on your audience. And it's not like...
What are you, Joe Paterno? No. All right!
It's not like Stefan was on just once. All those people that I named were regular guests who appeared multiple times.
That's fucked up.
All along the way that he was having these overt, over-the-top bad actors and liars on his show, he also had access to people who were supposed to be legitimate politicians who came on as guests. People like Governor Mike Huckabee, Rand Paul, Dan Crenshaw, and Ted Cruz. There's a reason that this brand of politician would still go on a program where the regular roster of guests is littered with extremists, among them outright cult leaders, fascists, gang leaders, felons, and Holocaust deniers. Steven Crowder is useful to them, and he has been since he lied about that union guy punching him. Along the way, Crowder's made a name for himself by posting up on college campuses with signs making declarative statements like, "There are only two genders," and insisting students change his mind. He's that guy.
Oh, he's that guy?
Yeah.
Fuck you!
He interestingly never really tried to pull off a stunt like this with adults, preferring to just befuddle unsuspecting undergrads who saw his table on the quad while killing time between classes. Along with Dave Rubin, Crowder is famous for being the sort to yell, "Debate me, and we want to exchange ideas," at everyone, but mysteriously refuses to even talk to Sam Cedar.
Yeah, that's unsurprising.
Who has been trying to get them to...
They'll talk to anybody, Dan.
Except Sam Cedar.
Well, I mean, we're not going to talk to Hatchet
Weird.
Man like that.
Weird.
We want to have a free and open exchange of ideas, Dan.
So anyway, what Alex is talking about with this post Crowder recently made, that he's learned that they're blocking him and stuff. There's a post, and there's screenshots that seem to imply that his channel is being shadow banned or some dumb shit. He posted that if you search for him or someone else in league with him, YouTube doesn't show you any of their videos, just videos from other channels, and this is a conspiracy.
Great.
This is all explained by the fact that the search he was showing was filtered and had the video option selected. There may be some other complaints that Crowder is raising, but I don't really care all that much. His career has shown him to be an unreliable source for just about anything, and this "they're blocking my content" thing is such a constant and fraudulent refrain from these right-wing con men, so I don't really want to take too much time up trying to sort out, get to the bottom of any of this. I really just cut this clip so I could talk about Crowder's guest list and his failed acting career.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. He gets he flies under the radar a little bit,
yeah.
but mostly that's because I've considered doing episodes about his show because he platforms people like Stefan Molyneux
or Lauren
Southern, like just some dangerous people disseminating fucked up ideas. But I've watched a little bit of it and I'm like, first of all, he's trying to be funny. And so what is that? Like,
which is sad.
Right. But it also has a thing where it's like, I don't want to necessarily take up a bunch of our time trying to sort of
suss out what is and isn't humor and what he's hiding.
Yeah.
When people
are doing this stuff, like they're hiding their extreme ideas behind humor, it
right.
becomes like walking through molasses, trying to be like, well, it was a joke. And it's just not worth the time. And then also I was listening to it or watching some of his work, and I'm like, this is painfully stupid.
Yeah.
Like it almost is... Like, it would feel like doing a critical review of something that's for children.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to engage with
it. The B movie.
But that said, he is a real fucked up weirdo.
Yeah, that's...
And he doesn't... He shouldn't get a pass.
That's not good. All of those, like, oh, I'll fight you, meet me in the ring challenges are stupid. But for an asshole who's actively fucking promoting Stefan Molyneux to teens, I will literally fight him. I am fine with it in this one case.
Well,
as long
as
there should be a great wall around Stefan Molyneux.
So, one of the big things that Alex is on this episode is, and it's a real heavy trend that continues through, into the 30th, is that he's talking about Satan. You might have noticed from our out of context drop about peeing on Satan.
I think everybody's fine with it.
Alex is deeply into accusing his enemies of being consciously in league with the devil.
Right. Okay.
And so he gets into that. He talks about how him and Mark Dice were both offered huge careers if they prayed to the devil. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, I would like documented evidence.
So then he gets into how it's not just him and Mark Dice.
Here's Bob Dylan on 60 Minutes more than 20 years ago. People say, oh, he was just joking. No, in the last segment today, I'll show Bob Dylan saying he went to the crossroads in the South.
See you at the crossroads.
And he sold his soul to the devil. Let me explain something, folks. In Hollywood, before most people get initiated, they actually ask you to do this, okay? They asked Mark Dice to do it. He said no. They asked me to do it. I said no. This is real. This isn't a joke. You're going to see that in the last segment today. I'll talk about it. Right now, here's Bob Dylan.
Still out here doing these songs, you know, you're still on tour.
I do, but I don't take it for granted.
Why do you still do it? Why are you still out here?
Well, it goes back to the destiny thing. You know, I made a bargain with it, you know, a long time ago, and I'm holding up my hand.
What was your bargain?
To get where I am now.
Should I ask who you made the bargain with?
with the chief commander
on this earth,
and then in the world we can't see.
Bob Dylan has been
the chief commander.
Okay.
The chief commander. Not a lot of people have had a conversation with the chief commander, but Bob Dylan has.
Okay, Alex, calm All down.
Right. Okay.
From that clip that Alex plays, Bob Dylan could have literally been talking about God. The chief commander of this world and the world we can't see doesn't have to be the devil. That said, I'm being intentionally obtuse. Of course he's talking about the devil.
Yeah, why wouldn't he be talking about the devil?
One thing that's important to point out is that Bob Dylan is a poet, and it's probably foolish to take a statement like this literally. When it comes to Alex and his interpretation, another Dylan quote comes to mind. Quote, "Sometimes it's not enough to know what things mean. Sometimes you have to know what things don't mean." The comment
that's why he's deep.
The comment Dylan was making is not him saying that he made a literal deal with the literal devil to get where he got in life. There's a common metaphor that people use to describe having to make sacrifices and give up things in life in pursuit of your overriding greater goals. The deal with the devil is that Bob Dylan got to become one of the most important songwriters possibly in American history, but in exchange he could never live a normal life. For an artist, life is never really normal. On the path to success, if there's to be success, their focus has to be so squarely on their craft that they don't often get to experience parts of life that everyone else does. They can live in poverty, so they can dedicate tons of time to getting good at what they're called to do. They keep completely different hours than people with normal jobs, essentially around everyone but apart. And then, if they're lucky enough to succeed and become a famous musician, for example, their life will never be normal after that point. From then on, they'll never really be sure if anyone in their life values them for themselves or for who they are in the world. Social interactions become distorted, and whatever alienation they felt before as an impoverished nocturnal performer is only elevated now that they've reached the goal that they were shooting for. I don't know. When I hear Bob Dylan say something like this, expressing that he doesn't stop performing or making music because he's keeping up with his end of the bargain, what I hear is him expressing that he made a deal with his own talent. He committed to be this musician to the exclusion of so many other human comforts that he swore he would never stop creating, and he's not going to stop now just because he's old, rich, and famous. This is embarrassing satanic panic level shit that Alex is doing. He's basically saying that pretty much every famous person, every celebrity you may enjoy, someone who might appear to be doing good social work, none of that shit matters. By definition, if they're successful, they made a deal with the devil. He's just trying to paint everything that isn't involved with his version of right-wing extremism, even things that may seem benign, as intrinsically evil and a threat to his audience. It's sad on one level, but it's also the sort of thing that doesn't seem like it has anywhere to go in the future other than violence. Like, once you paint everyone who doesn't agree with your dumb bullshit as being literal Satan worshippers who want to take your kids and kill them and put you in a slave camp, how does that narrative play out? Is there some point where detente can be reached with that sort of group? It seems like it has to lead towards escalation, and, you know, I think Alex probably has to be aware of that. Once yeah. people are willing Satan-worshipping child killers, like, you gonna negotiate with them?
I mean, it depends. You know, after a few, you know, opening salvos, you see what's happening. I don't know. Making a deal with the devil is an old, old, old thing in blues music that is,
it is.
Born almost entirely out of racism. There's no way that a black man can play the guitar that well.
There's that
he
as well.
Have,
now, if he was talking about like Robert
devil.
Johnson, yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Then we would have that conversation about that. And absolutely, Dylan's comments also harken back to that tradition.
Absolutely.
So there is that aspect of it too. Or I guess the literal devil is forcing Bob Dylan to keep making music. Because that was the condition of a deal they made to get The Times They Are a-Changin' on the radio.
Oh, I forgot.
That's also a possibility.
Well, then why did he take Bowie from us?
But if that's the case, you know, you got to make a literal deal with the literal devil
right,
in order to
right,
become
right,
famous.
Right, of course.
I have some bad news about the famous friends Alex has. You think Ted Nugent didn't make that deal, too?
Literal deal with the literal devil.
You think Charlie Sheen somehow became a gigantic actor and didn't sign up with the devil?
The bill was paid pretty quick, though.
He was winning. I don't know. This is all a bunch of bullshit. But the reason I get into this a little more, where as normally this might be something I just like, who gives a shit, is because this is a clear editorial decision.
Yeah.
It's Satan time.
Yeah.
It's so much Satan.
There's a lot of Satan here.
Yes. Like, and I know Alex talks about Satan and all this stuff a bit. It's overt. It's way over the top and very consistent throughout the 29th and 30th. Like here, most of this is just rambling bullshit about God and Satan.
And that's what this is all about. But if you really love God, you're not some shrinking violet, like a little fake priest and all these people. That's the devil making you think, oh, God's not powerful. You can't, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. You know God. You know all the enemy's operations, everything Satanists know beyond their most powerful leaders. But you don't even want it. You're like, it's like a stinking vampire bat on your arm. Get it away. I mean, you just can't even imagine just the full boost. It's unbelievable. Ah. But not everybody's meant to have that, are they? No, they're going to have to go with their God. And, you know, God gave us free will. I understand why God did it. Satanists go, oh, your God's a torturer.
Is fucking Vincent Price coming?
God just has the will to create new beings that have free will. And
Compliment your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil.
Oh, got cut off by that break, trying to ramble about God. Okay. I mean, it's exhausting. Like, listening to this is exhausting. Like, it's like a weird, over-the-top, religious, making this political struggle that he's in the middle of somehow have, like, this spiritual, apocalyptic, Armageddon connotation. It's the sort of thing that you only do if you're gearing people up for an expectation of violence.
Right.
And I really can't look at it any other way.
Yeah, I can only, I think of, what is it? Any advanced technology or any technology advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
Like any behavior that these people don't understand is indistinguishable from Satan.
Devilry.
You know, it's just like, that person is doing something. I don't know why. I'm going to go with Satan. And that's just the way that they fucking shut down any kind of openness to separate consciousness.
But the problem that I have with it, well, I agree with what you're saying, is that it's also something that does not have, possible avenues forward with. When you...
I don't know. A lot of people have been making deals with the devil lately. Why can't we get Alex to make one?
Well, I mean,
send him on down to Georgia.
Based on his discussion of killing dogs and being recruited by Satanists as a child, we don't know that he hasn't.
Okay, so maybe we're in a raptor situation where Mark Richards, by saying that the raptors are good guy, then makes the Raptors the bad guy, because if Mark Richards thinks they're the good guy, then they must be the bad guy. So in this case, Alex calling other people Satanists means that we are actually the good people because Alex himself is the Satanist.
All right, let's do some there more we go. Coke. No, I mean, like, let's not try and disentangle this, because I think Occam's Razor tells us that the easiest explanation for this is Alex is in a severe panic.
Yes.
And he needs to make his audience extremely engaged fast.
All right, that makes sense too.
Yeah. So Alex had solutions and marching orders, as we heard at the beginning of this episode. And he's going to get to them later, because he needs to make sure that his staff records the everything and releases it as a special report. He can't even be bothered to cut something like during the break or after the show. He needs them to record it. He's like, I need to focus real hard so we can make dual use of this time.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me get to the solutions. Let me get to the positive news. Let me get to the big news here, because I'm not holding back on this. It's just that
you are.
This is so big, and we're holding destiny in our hands. I know that if you as an audience do this, and if I go out as an example and do this as well, I know that we're going to turn things around, and I know we're going to absolutely put the globalists back on their heels and defeat them.
That's right, Alex. Stretch. We've got 3 hours to fill.
I absolutely stretch. Know it's the case. So let me tell you what it is now.
Go for it.
I will spend the second segment of the next hour, that's 10 minutes long, getting it all into one report, because I need this to be concise. I need to be laser focused and only cover this issue, because I go down all these rabbit trails because there's so much here to cover.
Like the devil.
And it deals with everybody hitting the streets.
So at this point, like, it's all vague and all just like, this is the solution. We got to hit the streets and we got to be aggressive. There's no sense of what he's talking about. It could be like, it could be protesting, or it could be go firebomb a globalist church.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Granted, it's obviously not that.
I don't think he thinks there's
that
much of a difference between the two.
Maybe. It's obviously not the latter, but you don't know. Like, you don't know what his headspace is, and he's so excited and teasing this out.
Right.
That it made me very uncomfortable.
He's been taking some of Barnes' law school speed.
Could be. So he's not telling us what it is, other than we got to take to the streets. And he's like, I'm not teasing this. All right, I'm not teasing this.
I don't get butterflies speaking to a big crowd of people. I don't get butterflies. You know, trying to pick up a hot chick when I wasn't married or whatever. I don't get butterflies. I'm about to get in a fight. But when I see destiny, and when I know it's in my hands, and when I know that if we don't win, true evil is going to run absolutely rampant, and it's our responsibility to fight as hard as we can, and then God will take us the rest of the way. When I know something's destiny, well, just like that, I started sweating about 5 minutes ago, as you can see if you're watching on television. Because the responsibility of this is so powerful, and it's almost like if I just come on air and say, here it is, I haven't done a good enough job. I need to drum roll and build this up with some ceremony, because people won't think it's important unless I do that.
I scream about
Holy shit.
I scream about shit all the time, to the point where everyone just thinks I'm crying wolf. So I have to protract this. I have to make it be like, we'll get to it in the next hour, but this is very important. Tell your friends, stop traffic, because I have a diminishing return with my sensationalism.
We're going to get to this in the second segment of the next hour, but I'm going to spend the final segment of this hour telling you all about how we're going to get to this in the second segment. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. And also, it made me really unnerved that he's talking about how he has butterflies and stuff like that. It's like, that implies that there's a little bit of like trepidation about reporting this or suggesting this. And it made me worried that like it is going to be something that's like beyond acceptable.
Right.
I don't think.
Let's kill a prole.
I don't think it is. Like, I don't want to be teasing this, like this reveal of what his suggestion is, as if to imply that it is like, let's go beat people up.
Right, or something.
Like that. It's not like that, but you gotta understand why, if you're listening to this, you're like a little bit like, this could be anything he's going to advocate his listeners do. And then when he says something like this, it makes it even more like, what are you going to suggest?
Because everything they've been doing in the censorship is to stop us from doing what we're about to do.
What?
What is that then?
Start a phone sex hotline. That's what he's saying, right?
They wouldn't stop him from doing that. So he finally gets to his solution here. And my response to this is, ooh, condescendingly, very yes. condescendingly, yeah, yeah, yeah. I say, oh, Alex, what a suggestion.
You go to these events, you stand up like Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi or Jesus Christ, the model of those men. Could go into the money changers' own dens. And who would expose the corruption of the system? Time for Americans to hit the streets, counter the leftist coup by bringing truth to their events. Our forebears were willing to fight an empire that had never been defeated, the British. And win. We don't That's have to physically true. Fight. We've just simply got to go to their events, get up there, buy the microphone, and then start getting key points out about the globalists and about their crimes and about how they're trying to crash the stock market and the Federal Reserve admits it and how they're trying to break our borders and how they're saying America was never great or how Hillary and her corrupt server or Uranium One and the Russians or Joe Biden and his son and the $4 billion gas company and the board of directors. We've got all the points that we recommend you shout out at them or you can do your own. All I'm saying is take action. They've wanted us off the air because they fear you taking action.
So his solution is yell conspiracy theories okay. at Democrat rallies.
Go to Democratic rallies and say, Joe Biden, brrr.
Yep.
Basically. And then the libs will be like, no.
And have a list.
And they'll be like, Hunter Biden. And we'll be like, no.
And there's a list that Alex is going to put out of all his approved talking points so you can just overwhelm people with a flood of. Yeah. Verbal diarrhea that yeah. there's like, what is going on?
Great. You guys won.
Yeah.
You beat us.
Yeah. This is amazing. Like his big suggestion that he has butterflies about is legitimately just go yell bullshit at people.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's so close to participate in local politics, but, and yet it's not, you
sure,
know?
Sure.
You know, it's almost like, go participate in your city council meeting. Close.
This is such stupid shit, but it's what you'd expect from Alex,
oh, yeah.
quite frankly. So he also, it's not just like go to rallies. He has further suggestions.
Go to D.C. Take your kids to the sites, the Smithsonian. That's all amazing. And then go spend hours teaching them real civics and how you take action. And video it when you do it. And then put it out. And it'll cause a chain reaction. We've done it before. We got to do it again.
So when he's saying we did it, first of all, also, I'm shocked he didn't plug Trump's hotel.
Yeah,
there,
no
when
kid.
He's saying go to D.C.
Yeah, right.
I was like, come on, Trump
do
hotel,
it.
Trump hotel.
Do it.
You know you want to.
What is he, the Ukrainian president? He's not going to plug
come
Trump's
on.
Hotel.
So, when he says there at the end, we've done it before, he's specifically talking about the Bill Clinton is a rapist contest that he had, where he paid people to go yell at Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton events. The problem here is
can't afford to pay people.
He's
anymore.
Not paying people.
Can't afford to pay people.
He doesn't realize that was a huge part of the equation
yeah.
is that he paid thousands of dollars to get yeah. people to go troll those rallies.
Yeah.
So I don't God. Know if it's going to work out.
What a ridiculous, ridiculous man. Go, we got to yell all these things at Democratic events and also go to D.C. Bring your kids, of course. You're going to want to see the sights. And then also be like, that's the Washington Monument. That memorializes the time Washington fucked the sky because that's how great America is.
It's a wild suggestion.
Oh, man.
So I think the overwhelming feeling that I have listening to this is like Alex just learned about protests.
Yeah.
Like he just learned that this is a part of, like you said, participatory democracy.
Right.
Up till this point had not realized that was an option. Like I don't understand why. This is like, I have invented the wheel.
There is send me money and voting.
Right.
And then he found a third one, which is go outside. He's doing great.
Hey, Rob New, why didn't you tell me about this? I hadn't heard of it, boss.
So a bunch of people get in the same place? For what?
It's weird. But the thing that is...
How many bullhorns per person?
What's crazy about it is that like Alex is still Alex. So he has to make like caveats that are like... I think they're important.
Don't go to Sandy Hook people's homes.
Well,
please don't go to Sandy Hook.
That would be a good caveat for him to have made a couple years back.
Yeah, exactly.
But for now, he has to make like a real disclaimer, and I think it's a bad sign.
Go protest in front of Facebook, in front of Google. Go and do legal and lawful things. If you want to pay for a local airplane, I mean, you're talking a couple hundred bucks for them to put the words on it.
No one's buying an airplane to get your Infowars.com.
We're were doing banners. Skywriting.
But he's done that a ton. He's like, buy a billboard.
Yeah.
But he has to say legal and lawful. And you'll see that's a trend.
Yeah.
That he has to keep reiterating, don't commit crimes. Because I know my audience, that's an assumption that I know that you guys want to commit crimes. And unless I'm very hyper-specific about do this legally and lawfully, you might end up, you know, bombing the UN like you suggested his audience might want to do back in 2013.
Yeah, not a ton of, like, you're not watching Maddow, and at the end she's like, by the way, all of the stuff I've told you, please respond to that in a legal and lawful way. There's an expectation they have of, you're not going to think, I should go commit a crime after watching this show.
Because you haven't primed the audience that way.
Exactly.
You haven't spent your entire, basically career talking about doing illegal and unlawful things.
Right.
So, Alex, like I said earlier, like, the Bill Clinton contest that he ran, it existed because there was money.
Yeah.
And he was paying people to get on the news and yell Bill Clinton's a rapist. And even he recognizes that, like, it's going to be a problem this time.
Back then, I could pay people, and I did $1,000 for each person that said Bill Clinton's a rapist and got it out on national or local television. 5,000 if you got it out repeatedly and it went mega viral. I paid out $300,000 plus.
Jesus!
And I earned myself the absolute hate of Hillary Clinton and the deep state.
You didn't need to work
for that. Now, I don't have $300,000 to do that in 2019. Because we got Trump elected.
That's a good way to spin it. I think the fact that he doesn't have $300,000 for this means that you're not going to get the same ad campaign you got last time.
No.
People were motivated by that.
Also, I don't like that you had $300,000 for that in the first place.
I mean, you gotta consider, I think he was way more flush
That's a lot of money to be able to give away on that. Like, he could have just done, like, a regular old ad campaign for a couple, you know, what, 20 grand? He would have been fine.
Not as effective as buzz marketing, because those people who are at those rallies, most people don't know that InfoWars is paying them to do that.
Right.
It appears to be organic, grassroots people who are yelling at Bill Clinton. In reality, it's people who are astroturfed being paid by Alex.
Yeah.
So it's a really, it's manipulative. It's very insidious the way that that's able to penetrate local news and news sources who aren't aware of what's actually going on. And I think that Alex values that much more than, like, say, this is paid for by InfoWars,
some kind
of a message.
Right.
Because then it's tainted. The messenger taints the message.
Right.
So the last half hour of Alex's Sunday show is just special reports. He straight up just leaves. He spent 90 minutes talking about how the Democrats are the devil and how people need to get into the streets to fight back. And I gotta say, I admire how he walks the walk. I literally have no doubt that he left his show and got his ass out there and did some meaningful direct action. Either that or he met with some lawyers about the millions of lawsuits he's mixed up in currently. One of the two. I'm not entirely sure.
It could be.
Either way, it's a real sad state of affairs over at InfoWars. Here you have a guy who's yelling all day about how this is a pivotal point in America and human history. And the battle, it's happening right now. It's good versus evil, and the future existence of mankind is on the line. Yet he can't even be bothered to finish his own show. It's little things like that that really provide a true glimpse into how sincere all of his ranting is. If he really believed a word of what he's saying, he would finish his show. He doesn't need to finish the show, though, because he said all he needs to say. He did some extremist ranting, he did some ad reads, and let's just call that a shift. Plus, he's finally discovered protests exist. So that's a big development, and I think it definitely calls for him to take half a day. I'm not judging, I'm just saying this is bullshit. Like, anybody who is sincerely in the position that he was in would, wild horses couldn't drag them away from their post.
Right. Just like anybody who actually liked the Constitution would be for impeaching Trump right now.
You betcha.
Yeah.
So we get to the 30th. Monday. And Alex doesn't want to read the news. He's kind of in a weird headspace.
It's hard and there's a lot of stuff going on. I understand.
Spoiler alert and warning. This clip includes probably the longest pause Alex has ever made. Your iPod or phone is not glitching. There's just a very long pause here.
If I just get up here and chatter off all the news, it really, I think, just becomes part of the background noise, doesn't it?
Has it begun? The pause?
President Trump tweeted out a couple days ago on Saturday that the United States is in danger of being in a new civil war.
Alex is very excited about this. Those pauses are outrageous.
Yeah.
Those are
long.
So crazy. So he has now found that Trump is talking civil war, and he is pumped about it. And also other people are talking civil war, like Rush Limbaugh was talking about it's a cold civil war. A lot of Alex's rhetoric is now like, I mean, he's been talking about this for a long time. I give Alex the utmost credit. And by that, I mean discredit.
Yeah.
In terms of him being right that these people are sounding like him.
Yeah. No, 100%.
It's a hallmark of his, rhetoric since at least 2015 that like we are in a state of civil war.
Yeah.
It's all under the surface. It's spy agency. It's a coup and a counter coup.
Right.
Like all that shit is very much penetrating people who are supposedly more mainstream, like Rush.
Yeah.
And the fucking president.
They've all lost their minds, right?
Yes.
Because they realize that they can't. They can't realize that there's nowhere to escalate from, right? What do you can't go higher than civil war.
I think that's a problem.
Other than like, I don't know, like death squads.
That's a problem, and it's something that we're going to have to wrestle with as we go through this September 30th episode. Because it's that old Hunter S. Thompson expression. You know, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. The going's getting weird, Rush Limbaugh's turning pro. In terms of, like, getting on board with this escalationist rhetoric that Alex Jones employs.
Yeah.
At the same time, Alex now has to figure out what he does with that. When the rest of the world is doing your extremist bullshit, what do you do? And I think over the course of this episode, I'm going to try,
shift to a knitting focus.
That would be great.
I think that actually would be great.
That'd be wonderful.
That'd be wonderful.
I don't want to go overboard, and I don't want to get too out of control and say that like Alex is calling for anything.
Yeah, that'd be wild if somebody was actually calling for a civil war. Like the president.
I think we have to debate a little bit about what Alex is actually saying on this episode. And we'll get through that as we get through that. But Alex, in order to build up to making the points that he wants about civil war, he has to sort of argue that there's this force that's it's the same thing we see in all eras of his show. They're demonizing us.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Sure.
So there's a new Netflix movie that Alex is particularly offended about.
All right.
Called In the Shadow of the Moon.
Uh-huh.
And here's his take on it.
That's some of the stories right here. In my stack, Netflix movie depicts time-traveling liberals carrying out pre-crime murder of patriots
no.
to prevent America uprising against globalism. In the year 2020, if you go into the show. And they're saying you've got to go out and kill all the conservative leaders before they stop the utopia world government that's being built. That's a highly funded,
highly
recommended by Netflix show with a star-studded cast.
Have you heard of this movie?
Absolutely not.
First things first, this does not have a star-studded cast. Michael C. Hall is legitimately the only person in it I've ever heard of. Also, this movie didn't have big backing.
Wait, Michael C. Hall?
Dexter.
Okay, all right.
This didn't have big backing behind it, this movie. According to the director, Jim Mickle, he wanted to have a theatrical release, but he couldn't find funding. Since the movie would be too expensive for most indie studios and too weird for a big budget, outfit. Also, the movie isn't quite being adored in the way that Alex seems to be pretending that it is. The AV Club headline for the review of the movie is, quote, In the Shadow of the Moon is a sci-fi misfire. Roger Ebert's website gave it 2 stars. Most reviews I've read said the plot is a little convoluted, and their use of time travel is iffy.
Yeah.
Now, the most important things here are that Alex is lying about what this movie is about. It's not about time-traveling liberals trying to kill patriots so they won't be able to stop globalism. I know that's probably what it feels like the movie is about, but it's not. It's one time traveler, for instance, as opposed to multiple, as he suggests. And she's not traveling back in time to kill patriots. She's killing people who are specifically part of an extremist white nationalist militia.
Wait, you're using words that mean the same thing.
To Alex, they might.
Exactly.
She's not trying to stop them from being able to lead an uprising against globalism. She's killing them because they're instrumental in carrying out a giant bombing, which leads to an outbreak of a civil war. Also, that bombing doesn't happen in 2020, it's 2024. But who cares about the details? Alex is just trying to make it look like this is about
Man.
Trump. whatever.
That's some weak shit.
On the surface, it would appear that Alex has no idea what he's talking about and he's just talking shit. But if you know how Alex operates, it's pretty easy to see what's up here. Alex is so averse to white people ever being portrayed as being even capable of terrorist acts that when a fictionalized white nationalist group does a bombing in a movie, he has to whitewash them as just good, upstanding patriots trying to fight globalism. The reality behind this is that Alex, deep down, and probably not so deep down, knows that one of his first sponsors, Larry Pratt, was at the Rocky Mountain Rendezvous, along with Aryan Nations, the Klan, and tons of extremist militia figures. He knows that most of his anti-communist heroes came out of the failed presidential campaign of segregationist George Wallace, which also spawned William Luther Pierce, the Turner Diaries, and the National Alliance. He knows his heroes in the John Birch Society were fascists. He knows that his primary source on Bilderberg worked for a publication that denied the Holocaust, which was run by neo-Nazi Willis Cardo. Alex knows exactly where he comes from, and he knows damn well that he's going to stop making money if he gets on air and says that he's mad that this Netflix movie made white nationalist terrorists look bad. That's what he wants to say, because he doesn't think they're bad, but he can't, so he calls them patriots fighting globalism. I resist calling this a Rosetta Stone, since Alex does that all the time, but I do think that if you understand this dynamic and what's going on here, it should lead you to question the broader application of his use of the word patriot. I'll go ahead and leave that there as something for people to chew on, as sort of a discussion question for the class, lest I get into a doctoral thesis about Alex's word games and how he hides his true intention behind facades.
Yeah, didn't he have a take on 12 Monkeys, too?
I'm positive he did. Yeah. He has a lot of movie reviews.
What about that one that Ethan Hawke was in where he
Before
was,
Sunrise?
He was in,
Before
no,
Sunset.
No, no, no.
Before
the,
Midnight.
The time travel one.
Probably.
Where he was like a woman and then became a man. Quantum and
Leap.
Got trapped in a time loop and then kills himself at the end every time. It's weird. It's a good movie. Or it's not. I don't remember.
Are you talking about Ashton Kutcher?
No,
I
am.
Movie where
this is a real movie.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody has ever seen this movie.
Probably.
I swear
Alex
to God.
Alex probably has.
It might not even be real.
So you've got this movie that is about someone traveling back in time in order to avert a terrorist bombing carried out by a white nationalist militia in order to provoke a civil war.
Yeah.
And Alex has turned this into a narrative about a movie about someone coming back to kill conservatives and patriots in order to stop them from fighting globalism.
Right.
It's very, very clear what he's doing there.
Yeah, and also I'm imagining that in his mind, if they bomb a movie theater, what they're actually doing is fighting back because they are under attack.
I mean,
the only reason they would bomb a movie theater is if the globalists had already physically attacked
if
them.
If pressed on the issue, that's probably what he would say, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters, like, in terms of the rhetorical tricks he's trying to use.
No, he loves white nationalist terrorists.
So, anyway, that's about that movie. Then he talks a little more about it.
And you look at who owns a large portion of the production house, the Chinese Communist government. You see, you can't make that up, can you?
Can you?
Yes.
So Alex is saying that the, quote, production house that made In the Shadow of the Moon is a, quote, production house that's largely owned by the Chinese government. Alex is just making this up. And I could tell you that without looking into it, since he said, quote, production house. In reality, the movie was produced in partnership between three companies, 42, Automatic, and Nightshade. 42 is a privately held company, meaning the Chinese government does not own it. It's based in London, and in a press release in Deadline announcing Netflix signing a first look deal with 42, all the partners in the company are listed. They are Ben Pugh, Rory Aitken, Kate Buckley, Kathy King, and Josh Varney.
All obviously fake names.
Kathy King, of course, is a well-known industry pseudonym used by Xi.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just Jim Varney, okay?
Probably. He faked
Ernest,
his death.
Ernest comes back from the dead.
He faked his death to turn the public against big tobacco.
Yep.
Yep. So.
What else you got?
Nothing. Automatic is run by three guys who used to work at Creative Artist Agency who decided to do their own thing. There's literally no indication that they're even part owned by the Chinese government. It seems like just a production outfit. Nightshade Studios is as close as Alex is going to get, but he's still way off. And I say that only because a part of their mission statement is to introduce independent movies into foreign markets, including those in Asia. But there's literally no indication they're even partially owned by the Chinese government. None of this matters. Alex has zero idea who even produced this movie. He doesn't know about 42 Automatic or Nightshade. It doesn't matter, because the reality is not important. He's built up a narrative that the Chinese government owns Hollywood, and they're using it to attack the noble patriots of America, and that narrative has to move forward. It's so crucial to protect the narrative that Alex is willing to take a movie about stopping white nationalist terrorist groups and make it into a movie about stopping patriots from fighting globalism, and then lie about the production house that made the movie being mostly owned by the Chinese government in order to make it look like the Chinese government wants to make movies that are about killing patriots.
Yeah, I can see why he had to leave for the last half hour of the show, man. That is exhausting to believe all that.
It would be.
That takes work.
I know that this goes without saying, but Alex has so little respect for his listeners. He doesn't hesitate for a second in saying that this movie was produced by the Chinese government, knowing it doesn't matter. Whoever's listening still at this point is going to believe him.
Like,
they don't care. It's a real bummer to stop back and think about the poor people that are caught in his web. So let's not.
Okay! Bye, poor people caught in his web!
So in order to reinforce his argument about this Netflix movie, he talks about some other movies.
And they've got all these movies and all these shows, like The Purge and The Hunt, where the evil right-wingers have got to be killed.
The Purge is a long series of movies that are just about laws being suspended. I don't know if I want to even engage with that, but let's talk about The Hunt.
I think they're an extended metaphor of income inequality.
I think there's an argument to be made there. Let's talk about The Hunt, though, which is the most ridiculous thing for Alex to be complaining about. That movie never got released because of right-wing backlash and a tweet from Trump decrying the movie, which I should point out he had not seen. That's really fucked up on his own, on its own, but it's also probably not entirely accurate. Some reports I've seen have claimed that it was actually all the mass shootings that kept happening that led to the movie being shelved, but it tends to get conflated with the right-wing backlash really easily. I can't quite say for sure what caused it to not come out, but either way, the right-wingers definitely tried to get it not released. And that's pathetic. Because the movie is really just a retelling of the story, The Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah, I remember them describing the plot of that and being like, oh, that's The Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah.
And then the right wing was like, they're trying to kill patriots. And I was like, I'm fine with this movie not being released. Whatever, man.
It's, you know, the plot of that story is just that rich, evil people hunt humans for sport.
Yeah, like in The Most Dangerous Game.
Right.
Or the John Leguizamo movie, The Pest.
Or that story was written in 1924 and has been adapted into a ton of movies, like The Pest. Or, most notably, Surviving the Game, starring Richard Belzer, associate Ice-T.
Oh, shit. I thought you were going to say it started the bells, and no. I was like, the world's coming together, man. It's all one.
But his associate, Ice-T.
it's a flat circle.
Yeah. The middle Americans, called deplorables by their captors in the movie The Hunt, are kidnapped and hunted by evil liberal elites. They're the heroes of the movie. They're the people who you see the movie through, you experience their story, and the audience empathizes with them. It's literally their story of survival that's being followed. The film was produced by Blumhouse, the same studio company that made Jordan Peele's movie Get Out. Peele has said that his intention when making Get Out was to confront white liberals with their own contradictions. He told Variety, quote, "You find the insidious qualities that white liberals have. The gut punch of the movie is ultimately meant to say that racism is a human problem, and the woke people know not to call themselves woke." It's a pretty fair assumption to think that the same studio that made that might be interested in producing a film like The Hunt, where the audience is faced with the dehumanizing attitudes many liberals may hold towards rural people, middle Americans, and conservatives, much like my friends had about Moose or L.A. Monte in younger days. From literally everything I can tell, that's what this movie was about. But because the right-wing media is so completely out of control, stupid, and sensitive, they refuse to even engage with satire that's meant to bring people together and encourages liberals to explore their unexamined biases. Like, it's crazy to me that this complete disconnect with anything. It's so reactionary and stupid.
I mean, there's no other way to put it other than the billionaires won when it comes to the conservatives. Like, the billionaires just completely destroyed any sense of reality they have. Like, the billionaires fought reality and won for 47% of Americans or whatever it is. That's pretty... That's
at least
like,
a large section of that 47.
That's pretty amazing. They defeated reality, Dan.
In some corners, yes. But I don't think it's all 47, I think.
No. But, I mean, there's money least... and then there's dark wizardry. And I think they've transcended money.
Yeah. Okay. So Alex also, one of his chief things here, now that this impeachment thing didn't go away after a day, one of his things is preemptive damage control, because he needs to instill in his audience's mind that anything that happens is a setup.
Yeah,
so any whistleblower that comes out and says something,
obviously,
that's a plan. Anybody who accuses Trump of, like, let's say sexual assault, that's all a plan.
Right.
He needs to inoculate them to the idea that there are going to be some fucked up things that end up coming out.
And
all of that's just fake.
It's all made up. They then turn around and say that when Trump says, you try this, it'll cause a civil war, that he's trying to invoke a civil war, trying to intimidate them.
Yeah.
When all Trump's doing is pointing out what's going to happen. Now, when Trump means a civil war, he means a big, bloody, millions dead. Because believe me, once the veneer of civilization peels off, and once a shooting war starts, there's been a lot of Santa Clauses that have been making lists and checking it twice and knowing who's naughty and nice, and all the meth head devil worshippers and Congress people and globalists. I mean,
he's essentially saying that he and a lot of his weirdo militia friends have made kill lists of their enemies, that once things fall apart and it starts, there's going to be some targeted assassinations being carried out by his right wing buddies.
Yeah, well, naturally. I mean, that's just good tactics.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. In terms of great tactics, fucked up. Completely fucked up on a radio show.
I know.
Because it kind of encourages his audience that, like, that's what
make
we're...
Make your own kill
that's
list.
That's a smart thing to do.
Absolutely.
And Alex, we've heard him in the past say, find the globalist in your town.
Oh, hey, there's a school teacher who teaches your 9-year-old, and she said something about there being evolution.
They're pushing...
Guess what she is? Globalists!
They're pushing UNESCO education in order to indoctrinate your children.
Oh, man. And what about the lunch lady? What does she put in your kids' food?
Probably fluorides. Vaccines and fluorides in the food. It's troubling. I mean, it's the sort of thing you just can't be saying shit like this. Even if you're creating the pretense of, like, you know, we're not doing anything violent or anything. You're preparing people to act in such a way, that goes against whatever disclaimers you're making.
And the very idea that saying that the president saying if this happens there will be a civil war, and that not being a threat or intimidation, that being purely neutral as just like stating a fact,
that's what mobsters
do.
What
are you talking about? Oh, you're gonna impeach me? Well, it'd be terrible if something happened to your country.
Terrible if there was a civil war.
It'd be awful.
I think Alex is mobbed
so
up
pathetic.
Comments from 2015 are coming back to clear, sharp focus.
What a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I hate all these people so much.
So in this next clip, this is where I think really we get to see a pretty clear picture of why, even if Alex Jones hides behind all this, like, I don't want violence, all this stuff, all of his words are meaningless. Like, it does not matter, because the larger worldview that he's perpetuating necessitates violence. And you'll see that in this clip, I hope.
I said 3+ years ago, we were in a cold civil war, and it was beginning to get hot. You can just type in cold civil war, Infowars.com, into a search engine. It'll pull up dozens of shows and articles with that in them. And I described it on a Richter scale of a 1 to 10. I said on a civil war, we're at about a 3 in 2016. That's a civil war inside the government, inside the deep state. And now we're at about a 6 in a cold civil war. But when it gets up to a 7, 8, or 9, it then starts cooking off, popping off, and then you get a hot civil war.
Based on what?
And I don't have any dreams or wishes for that. I'd like to fix everything peacefully. I'd like to stop all this, but.
But. Hold on. He said, but.
The globalists are in a mad frenzy. They smell their own blood, their own piss, and they understand that the clock is running out on them, and that they've committed all these crimes, and that they're going to be defeated. And so, like a giant squid trying to take its prey to the bottom of the ocean with it, it's wrapped around us like a face sucker from Alien and is not going to go down without a fight.
That's unacceptable. And I really think that everybody needs to carefully consider exactly what he's saying. Alex is saying that in the span of 3 years, the Civil War rating has doubled, whatever the fuck that means. His imaginary Civil War scale is a ludicrous trivialization of the serious topics he's discussing, but I'm going to go ahead and leave that aside for a second. What's important is that he's saying that this thing has escalated very severely, and that if it goes up one more notch, that's the shooting war starting, bubbling over. He doesn't want a shooting war, he says, and that he wants to solve things peacefully, which is great! What a relief! Alex wants to resolve things peacefully. And then he says, but. That but is his whole career. That but is the mask that he uses to cover up his extremist leanings. He pretends to advocate for nonviolent solutions, but. After that but, he clearly explains that there's no chance of nonviolent solutions, because the globalists are a squid trying to take the patriots down under the ocean, and that they're not going to go down without a fight. I'm well known around these parts for giving Alex Jones the benefit of the doubt. When everyone was complaining about his battle rifles comment, I was clear that I thought he was stupid and that he wasn't, but he wasn't advocating violence necessarily. It was more a fucked up fantasy that he had where he got to kill people in self-defense, which is super common for him. I point these things out, but I generally don't think that he's crossed some sort of larger line. I think that last clip is crossing a line. He's telling his audience that we're mere steps away from a hot civil war, and there's literally no hope of any kind of peaceful solution. If you're listening to shit like this and you believe him, why are you going to wait for the globalist squid to take your children to the bottom of the ocean? If you believe Alex, the declaration of war is inevitable. No matter how many times he pretends he doesn't want violence, when you portray the supposed enemy as being a rampaging squid that will kill you unless you kill it, you're advocating violence against that squid. Alex is probably totally fine legally, at least according to rulings like Brandenburg versus Ohio, which decided that the government can't punish people for abstract calls for illegal acts. But I'm less concerned with the legal side of this. I'm more interested in the moral and ethical side. What Alex is doing is turning the temperature up on his rhetoric, and that is a troubling sign. When Trump is referring to a possible civil war, and people like Rush Limbaugh are following that lead and normalizing the idea through more supposedly mainstream right-wing media, Alex has nowhere to go. He has no reason to exist unless he's a little bit past the horizon. And when the horizon is discussing a cold civil war, that means Alex needs to talk about the hot one. This rhetoric is particularly unnerving on the heels of Sunday's episode where he rallied his audience to get to the streets. That was the solution to all the globalist meddling on Sunday was go yell conspiracy theories at them. And here on Monday, he's talking about a civil war with millions dead being inevitable. This kind of disjointed messaging, this kind of escalation, all it does is make it more likely that someone listening will be convinced that the war is coming, so why the fuck should I wait? All I can do is hope that that does not happen. But if it does, be very, very aware that Alex did everything in his power to make that outcome more likely. That is all he's doing here. And like I said, I don't know, I don't think it's illegal, and I don't think, you know, I don't think he has any punishment that's coming for it, but don't be naive to the fact that he knows that he's playing with fire. He's playing with a gullible audience that's willing to believe clear misrepresentations that he makes about literally just about everything.
Yeah.
And he's saying, like, the inevitability aspect of this is so, like, he talks about that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, don't
get
me wrong. I'm not saying that this is a unique feature.
Right.
Of his rhetoric. The idea that, like, yeah, the globalists aren't going to go down with a fight or whatever. All that stuff's all good and well. We now have the president tweeting about civil war shit.
Right.
The climate in the world is so insanely touchy. Let's say. Is that a fair word to use?
Touchy makes sense.
It's one thing for Alex to ramble his bullshit and say, like, we got to take out the globalists. There's no way they're going down without a fight. In times when, like, we might not be, when he's out of step with larger forces.
Yeah.
When he's just being crazy and extreme, it doesn't strike me as nearly as dangerous. But when you are in a political climate where, like, these things are being bandied about by, people who aren't Alex Jones.
Yeah.
You enter a territory.
Ostensibly more serious people.
You enter a territory where you have a real serious problem, I think. I think it feels very different to me.
Well, I think it's maybe better for him to do that. I'm not sure. And let me try and explain my thought process on this. None of his listeners are going to start a civil war.
Probably not.
They're not capable of it.
They're mostly probably out, like, very outside of big,
right.
Big population areas.
Right.
They're, 50 plus. They're, yeah, they're very disengaged.
But some of his listeners may commit massive, awful crimes, even acts of terrorism based around the idea that there's going to be a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Alex in this space is he is going to kill people. He's going to get people killed. He's not going to be, especially because now there's so much civil war talk, he's
right.
not going to be blamed for it.
It
could be an InfoWars sticker, or it could be I watch fucking Fox and Friends.
Right.
You know?
Could I reframe that? I would say that it's more fair to say not that Alex is going to get people killed, but that he's going to increase the likelihood of that. Because I don't want to draw a direct,
right.
like causal relationship, but the rhetoric that he puts in the world and this escalationist,
I apologize.
They're
all going to get people fucking killed.
They
Is
all.
Is that what you would prefer?
They're all increasing
they're all
the
murders.
Likelihood.
They're all murderers. I don't know what more to say.
I understand the instinct to frame it that way.
Right.
I just think it's more precise to say, that the way they're characterizing things and the way this is being discussed, and especially Alex Jones, like what it does is raise the tenor, it increases the temperature and makes those sorts of things more likely.
Yeah.
And if you want to express it as they're killing people, then I understand why. I disagree with the framing only from a purely
I understand.
Sentential standpoint.
Yeah. No, I get you.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. I just think that, I just think you can't behave this way. I really think that it's corrosive. It doesn't lead to anything other than whether it's increasing the likelihood of something terrible now or later. That's all it does. Like, what are you going to do in 6 months? Be like, wow, we've reached an agreement with the globalists.
Yeah.
There's no way back.
Yeah.
You can't get home from here. This is a place where you're gone.
And it's not like that's going to attract new viewers. It's not like they'll be super fucked. If somebody's like, oh yeah, finally somebody's actually saying, let's go fight a civil war. You're probably already listening to InfoWars.
Or you're maybe,
you know?
Or maybe you're someone who used to, and then you got further radicalized.
Yeah,
and
you're
like, wow, Alex is catching
up. Yeah.
You know, there's no point of this that leads towards health.
Right.
There's no part of this that leads towards rapprochement.
Yeah.
There's no part of it that takes you anywhere other than destruction. Whether it's the destruction of your enemies or everybody.
Right.
That is,
or the impeachment of Jefferson Davis. That's
certainly
also on the table.
That is in the cards.
That's
I've
in
heard
there.
From a high level source. So, Alex goes on to demonize his enemies some more and make one of my favorite classic blunders of his.
These people are psychotic control freaks. And Thomas Jefferson was once asked,
Come on.
The limit to which tyrants will go. And Jefferson rightfully said, whatever level you will accept, because there's no end to these people's depravity.
Is not a Jefferson quote.
I love the construction though. Like someone just came up to Jefferson and, hey man.
Hey, what are you up to? Yeah. Hey, anyways, what do you think tyrants will do?
That's not a Jefferson quote. That's, Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen in an interview. It was part of a speech that Douglass gave against slavery, which I should point out is an institution that Alex's ancestors fought the last civil war to uphold. So cool.
Yeah.
But now
thank God that those very same people who enslaved people are able to quote them and misattribute it to a white person.
In order to defend your instinct to lead us closer and closer to another civil war.
Yeah, exactly. What is he, CNN? Did five white women start the end of the Civil War, for Christ's sake?
So, again, to reiterate, Alex is expressing that there is no hope of this being resolved.
There's no giving in. There's no making deals with them. These are a bunch of people who've had power for a long time, intergenerationally, who just don't know what they're doing and just can't stop and can't back down, and they want to be caught and they want to be destroyed, and they're just power mad. It's called megalomania. So what are we going to do? They're not going to stop. They want to fight. It's existential. They believe they must dominate us. They must absorb us. They must mount our head on the wall to finally be successful. It's a little pee-pee syndrome.
I think you're smart to play that music.
Yeah.
Get him a splash of water.
Go. Get.
What you see is just like a very clear articulation that like they won't stop until we're dead.
Yeah.
And if that's who you're up against, you're advocating killing them.
That's...
I understand. I'm not saying it's a legal thing, but just from a pure reasoning standpoint, if for them to succeed, Their only motivation is mounting all of our patriot heads on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
The obvious conclusion that you're driving people towards is they must be crushed. They want to be crushed!
And you must do it before they crush you.
Exactly.
Which is so fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. Because the answer to that is, yes, you can make a deal. You can... I mean, obviously, Alex can't, but...
You can't when they're the devil.
I know, but that's the point.
Who are you, Bob Dylan?
Historically, we always do. How is it that people don't look at South Africa as just a big, like, you can make a deal with the worst human beings on the fucking planet, because it's either that or you turn into a goddamn genocide machines, and that's not how we should live. That's not how we can live.
Sure. Or, I mean, you see it...
Like, they didn't even take back all their fucking land from South Africans.
Right.
Which has led to a lot of the problems we're seeing today.
That's also kind of a problem.
Yeah, they should have taken all their land back.
I think we actually get into a touch of that here in this next clip, because Alex has this conception that what happens over the course of history is that evil grows, and then there are wars, and then after wars, people get back to goodness and God. So he's doing this in order to normalize the idea of we're going to have to go through this war, and then on the other side, it's going to be great.
You just got to fight a war.
So he's minimizing the tragedy and the horror that would come from people fighting in the streets, let's say. And I also think he's just wrong.
All right, my friends. When you study history, you look back at all the huge wars and the hundreds of millions dead and the horrible, corrupt, evil groups that would rise up and try to take power, and they would then burn across the planet's surface like a plague of locusts, and then finally would be met.
Sure.
And then you'd have a new golden age once people had faced down evil again. They would get back to God, get back to morality. They'd try to change the world.
So, I'd like to ask Alex, since he's a student of history, as he says, what the fuck war is he talking about? Since he's in the middle of trying to facilitate a second civil war, let's reflect back on what happened after the last one. Oh, that's right. The devastating Reconstruction era.
That's when everything went great, right? Mm. And we just went back to normal. Mm. Everything was fine. All of the slaves, they were freed, and then they got equal rights immediately. Mm. Like, wham! Like, snap of a finger.
With the gift of hindsight, that's not a period I would call coming back to God and trying to make the world a better place. Black Americans really suffered a lot, and the former Confederates were treated with a policy of leniency, so actually Alex might look at that differently than I do.
Yeah.
But then, hey, let's consider the two big world wars. In the aftermath of those wars, people did strive to make the world a better place, kind of. At least I would argue they did. After World War I, there was the creation of the League of Nations, and after World War II, the United Nations. I would tend to see those organizations as at least attempts to make the world better and make human annihilation less likely. Alex, however, sees them as globalist plots to take away his guns, so this doesn't quite work for what he's saying. Looking over the history of wars, I don't think that his argument makes sense. But it kind of feels right. But like everything that comes out of Alex's mouth, it's utter bullshit. Or he thinks the League of Nations and the UN were attempts to come closer to God. One of the two.
Yeah.
One of the two. I'm not sure exactly. But based on his own entire worldview,
right.
The two biggest wars
in
modern history have not led to coming back to God. They've led to the League of Nations and United Nations,
right.
Which he thinks are attempts to destroy the world.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't fucking know what he's talking about.
I think he's talking shit
and trying to encourage people towards a fucking civil war.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Has anybody talked really about, like, how impossible a civil war really is?
It'd be real tough.
Like, one side would probably have the military and then everybody else would be fucked.
I don't think that it's a likely outcome. No. But I do think that radicalizing people to the point where they would commit acts of urban terrorism, let's say,
yeah,
is possible.
For sure.
I'm not getting up here and saying that, like, that is what's going to happen. But that construction of what you would call a civil war is more likely than the South and the North fighting.
No, it'd be more likely a terrorist insurgency of like a million people, and that's fucking it, against the rest of America.
So one of the big essential pieces of this in order for it to fly is that Alex needs to paint all of his enemies again as satanic, which he's been working on since the 29th, the previous day. It's a very major piece of this move. He needs to make sure that you understand that everyone who you hate and who is trying to keep the Patriots down, they're all willing participants with Satan. And so he takes a shot at Jack Dorsey, and this is kind of sad.
Learn who sold their soul to Satan. Very important report I put out. And that ties together with this tweet from 2006 by Jack from Twitter. Making the good pasta, reading through some amazing parts of the satanic verses, the golden threads begin to intertwine.
No way.
How beautiful.
He is not talking about that.
Sweet, sweet Satan.
No. You dumb fuck. God damn it.
Jack Dorsey. They sold their soul because they would carry out evil.
So you already understand what's going on here. The Satanic Verses.
Salman Rushdie is the devil!
It's a 1988 novel by Salman Rushdie. Title of that book is an allusion to a group of verses in the Quran that some have suggested are not divinely inspired, but said to be said to Muhammad by pagan goddesses. But the word Satan is in there, so boom, Alex is able to use it to prop up his dumbass satanic panic he's trying to whip up.
Oh, man.
Something that I find particularly interesting is that this tweet is fucking old news to anyone who travels in conspiracy circles. And that's because it was already subject to intense scrutiny during the whole Pizzagate affair, since Jack says the good pasta, and of course that's code for killing children.
Oh my god, I hate these people so much.
There's internet bullshit on this going back to November 2016, but the thing that I think is funny is that Alex is trying to reintroduce this and use it to call Jack a child-killing Satanist, but also pretending he's not like those other Pizzagate people who tried to use this tweet to call Jack a child-killing Satanist.
Yeah.
Because, of course, in the present day, Alex is trying to pretend he never did Pizzagate.
Right.
He was way too smart for that.
Right.
This is some sad shit right here. This is the kind of skills Alex is bringing to the table these days. Pretending that a very famous novel that got a fatwa declared on,
like,
Salman Rushdie.
Really famous.
Yeah.
Like, even if you haven't read it, the idea, you know, Rushdie got an entire government to try and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal worldwide.
Real big.
Yeah.
And Alex is trying to pretend that the book is about a satanic Bible or something.
Man, you can't be these people.
Like, you understand, like, listening to this, I'm jostling between feelings of real sincere concern about the escalation of violence in Alex's rhetoric and his complete incompetence as a propagandist. If anyone listening to this show Googled the Satanic Verses, they would immediately see that Alex is either lying about it having anything to do with Satan, or he has no idea what he's talking about, yet he's making it a big part of the information he's disseminating. What I'm saying is I'm deeply concerned about what Alex is doing, but I also see how easy it would be to get out of his trap, you know, if you were trapped in it, because his skills have so completely deteriorated. And I really sincerely hope that people are able to see their way back to reality, because this is taking the form of like a really destructive worldview that he's and the ramping up of the intensity of it is not it's not good.
If you start a civil war and your guy is the guy who is telling you that the satanic verses mean you actually believe in Satan.
Yeah.
We're in full on like Morlock territory. Mm. We're past any semblance of intellect whatsoever. It's just bananas.
I think that there's intellect.
Violent, destructive forces.
I think there's intellect there, but there's also like people who have had hooks put into them by it, like in emotional, naive places. I think that if people could escape those bonds a little bit, that they wouldn't appear so stupid. There's a gullibility that some people have, or a vulnerability to this sort of attack that Alex is carrying out on them.
Right, I understand.
Yeah.
It's not that, I mean, the Morlocks weren't, they weren't like incapable of.
What you mean
anything.
Is more the intellect is overridden.
Yeah.
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 And I'll agree with you on that.
And they're just a destructive force.
I do think that's the case. But look, we're just normal humans.
Humans.
We are mere mortals, flesh bags.
Sure. Obviously we did make our deal with the devil though, so we're empty flesh bags. So,
we don't have the gifts that someone like an Alex Jones has, who, I mean, we've already learned that he's psychic.
Yes.
And he talks a little bit he talks a little bit more about that in this next clip.
I'm a very empathic person. I pick up on people's emotions, energy.
That makes this worse.
I undoubtedly have the touch, as everyone has, but I've got a particular touch too much.
The shiny?
I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that the energy level on the planet right now is explosive. I've never felt anything like it. It's hard for me to even be on air. And I can tell you, the deep state is making their move on Trump. This is 100% real. And if they're unable to remove him, they're going to try to assassinate the president. I guarantee you they're trying to poison his food.
Hey, we're back to food poisoning!
Like 2 years ago, he and Roger Stone said that Trump's Diet Cokes were being poisoned with a slow-acting sedative that's also addictive or something.
I mean, you did see him speak at the UN, so they could be right just like 2 years late.
All of this shit is the same stuff he's been saying for 3 years now.
Yep.
They're making their move. They're going to try and kill him. There's nothing new about this. And that's the thing that I guess maybe is more my point with how irresponsible this stuff is. When the world is in a hot state of affairs, not a hot civil war, but when tensions are really high,
yeah,
the same sort of things that Alex does all the time take on completely different looks. They become so irresponsible. In other times, like, go fuck yourself. But when tensions are rising and the people, I don't know, you can't take this out of the context of the time it's being said in.
And
it makes what would normally just be like ignorable and like, go keep rambling, Alex, into like, you could get someone to do something bad with this kind of talk.
Yeah, the guitar strings are very, very, very tight and, you are trying to snap them.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. I mean, like, if the string is super tight, normal strumming could break it. Whereas normal strumming is just like, you could put up with that in normal times.
No problem. Unless it's at a house party and you're in college.
Then you cannot put up with that.
Get the fuck out of here, dude.
So Alex yells about Antifa a whole bunch. Whatever.
Sure.
But
Antifa, bad.
He lies about the ADL. He says that they really love Antifa in this next clip.
Sure.
And that's great.
ADL says Antifa are wonderful people, and anyone criticizing them is basically a Nazi, and that any Antifa anti-images are hate symbols. How sick of the Anti-Defamation League.
So that clip didn't sound right to me, so I decided to check what he's talking about. There's a page on the ADL.org, their website, in the resources section titled, quote, "Who are Antifa?" It's kind of a description. It's just a description that Antifa is a word that's used to describe a collection of individual groups who are connected by their willingness to confront extreme right-wing street action. But it's also not all positive. From the page, quote, "Their presence at a protest is intended to intimidate and dissuade racists, but the use of violent measures by some Antifa against their adversaries can create a vicious self-defeating cycle of attacks, counterattacks, and blame. This is why most established civil rights organizations criticize Antifa tactics as dangerous and counterproductive." The article goes on, quote, "All forms of Antifa violence are problematic. Additionally, violence plays into the victimhood narrative of white supremacists and other right-wing extremists and can be used for recruiting purposes." This is what you might call a middle-of-the-road take. Far from celebrating Antifa and saying that anyone who opposes them are automatically Nazis or what have you. What Alex probably takes issue with is that the ADL resists the urge to make moral equivalences between Antifa, even if you think their violence is not great, and the people who Antifa are protesting. Quote, "That said, it's important to reject attempts to claim equivalence between Antifa and the white supremacist groups they oppose. Right-wing extremists have been one of the largest and most consistent sources of domestic terror incidents in the United States for many years. They've murdered hundreds of people in this country over the last 10 years alone. To date, there have not been any known Antifa-related murders. This is not a document that's celebrating Antifa as much as it is recognizing that those individuals are responding to a real problem, but the ADL doesn't like some of the means in which they're doing so.
Yeah.
Alex's main gripe is that the ADL added some new entries to their database of hate symbols, reflecting that certain things had been adopted by far-right extremists as a way to signal to each other. The bowl cut and OK sign were on that list, as was the use of anti-Antifa images.
The bowl cut?
Yeah, because of Dylan Roof. His bowl haircut.
So white supremacists are getting bowl cuts?
Apparently, yeah.
Man, they should go back to skinheads. Well, bowl cuts are hideous.
If I had to guess the reason that they added this anti-Antifa images to their list of their database is that the only people who really hate Antifa enough to circulate images about them are far-right extremists.
Yeah.
The ADL argues that these images, generally the Antifa logo of two flags within a red circle crossed out with, you know, the slash across it, it's just an updating of the white supremacist iconography that was used against Sharps, the group of anti-racist skinheads. Nothing about this says that if you don't like Antifa, you're a Nazi or anything like that. All they're saying is that right-wing extremists and white supremacists are using anti-Antifa imagery as a means of spreading their message. I don't think that's a debatable point. They're definitely doing that. That database of symbols doesn't imply that if someone is using one of them, they are definitely using it the same way extremists are. For example, they list 100% as being a symbol of extremists because it has become a shorthand for 100% white and was used as common slang among white supremacists. That in no way means that the ADL thinks anyone who says, like, keep it 100 is signaling that races shouldn't mix. This is an intentional misrepresentation by Alex in order to demonize the ADL.
That is indicative to me of a lot that white supremacists have adopted a piece of slang that is 15 years old in the black community.
Well, I mean,
as a way of confirming themselves. It's a little bit, you're showing your cards there a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you look at the ADL's list of symbols, it includes a whole lot of things that are just like the number 12 is included because 1 and 2, A and B, if you make the letters, Aryan Brotherhood. That 12 is a number that's like used by those Aryan Brotherhood people.
Right.
Like, it's not to say that the number 12 is fucking racist.
Well, that's why I only use the word dozen, though.
Right.
Because I can't say the number 12.
That's why I always get
I said it.
That's why I always get a baker's dozen.
That is why.
But then 13 is probably a symbol, too.
But the letter B is unlucky.
Anyway, look, it's just there's tons and tons of things on that list. And it's mostly just a resource to know, like, is there another connotation to this? It's a very minor thing. Alex is just trying to attack the ADL because they oppose people who are like him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So he complains more about Antifa, and he plays, like, a special report about them. And I don't know who this is who's saying this, but there's a clip of somebody saying something that's real, like, stupid.
I think we should classify them as a gang. You know, they come dressed in uniforms, they have weapons, they're almost a militia. I think we need to think about that in terms of our law enforcement approach.
So we need to classify Antifa as a gang because they show up to demonstrations in a uniform, carrying weapons, and are almost a militia. By that logic, I have some bad news about how we would then classify all of the people Alex likes who show up to demonstrations dressed the same, carrying guns, and are actually a militia.
I don't understand, Dan. Are you saying
you broke the rules.
Damn it!
I've probably also already, and I just didn't catch it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, be that as it may.
Right. You can say that.
Are you saying to me that somebody forged a sword that has two edges on it?
It's impossible.
This technological revolution is astounding.
And that's why this type of thinking is so fucking stupid.
They are stupid!
This argument is so weak. I mean, good luck coming up with a metric to justify classifying Antifa as a street gang that doesn't also ensnare all of your right-wing dumb-dumb friends.
I have a metric.
What?
Don't ever talk about all of my right-wing dumb-dumb friends and only ever talk about Antifa.
That's not a metric.
Yeah.
I assume the metric they would try and use is number of videos I've seen where people are yelling, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's still not even a good metric.
I don't know if I would go with the chanting either, because that one, once you start chanting, then you got all the Trump rallies.
Yeah.
Then we're in real trouble there.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess. So Alex starts lying about Trump a little bit. It's all in service of the idea of, like, Trump needs to take over control of the entire government.
Well, of course, we do need a fascist in power. Otherwise, my years of decrying government overreach wouldn't make any sense, Dan.
Alex is 100%. Oh, that's a gang sign.
Oh, shit!
He is absolutely trying to advocate for and make excuses in case Trump consolidates power in an authoritarian fashion.
Yeah.
And so Trump comes in, and he did fire all the lobbyists. Now, he's had some of his staff secretly become lobbyists and run their own scams.
What
that's been
that
a big problem. Because just because Trump won't do it and makes his own decisions, it doesn't matter because the people under him are running all sorts of scams. So a lot of them are bought off. A lot of them are paid off. A lot of them take money. Then they can be compromised. And they're told, you better go in and take out Trump. You better find some reason or we're going to burn you and put you in prison. And it's because Trump's never gotten full control of the Justice Department that they're making this move right now because they've still got some of their people in there.
So he's got to take over the courts, the judicial wing.
I don't like this.
No.
I don't like this mainly because, and we've talked about this in the past, but this is such a, like, Alex has no backbone. Nothing.
None.
This man is a pathetic, weak, backboneless fucking jellyfish.
Yeah.
And for all of his posturing, it is so pathetic to see him do. Really? Mm. He's perfect, and it's all of his underlings.
Right.
It
they're
can't
secretly
possibly.
They've become after
what
the fact lobbyists.
What are you fucking talking about? Grow a goddamn spine.
But he has to do that because Trump does hire and has employed a lot of lobbyists, and one of his primary complaints, as we learned from listening to the time when Obama was elected, one of his first things that he said is he's filling the place with lobbyists. So since that was his critique of Obama, like, it's a huge part of the Obama deception, that documentary, in quotes. He has to try and, you know, depict the reality of Trump's administration as being like, he's the opposite. And that's not the truth at all.
Yeah, I remember being very unhappy with the people that Obama put in his administration in 2008. And then 2016 happened. I was like, man, Obama was very restrained.
According to Open Secrets, the Trump administration employs 177 people who hold positions as lobbyists currently.
No. Oh, how many people do they fucking employ? 178?
That's to say that they are both lobbyists and administration staff.
And that is fine.
That list includes Chad Wolf, the chief of staff for the Department of Homeland Security, Andrew Wheeler, the administrator of the EPA, Reed Rubenstein, the senior advisor to the Department of the Treasury, Patrick Pizzella, the acting secretary of labor, and David Bernard, the Secretary of the Interior.
And these are all people that you want to have a active financial interest in the policies that benefit the people who pay them.
Mm. I'm not sure how this ranks compared to past presidents, so I don't want to make any kind of statements on that front. I don't know.
What are we talking about?
It might be less than other administrations. Yeah. I don't think that really even matters. You know, like, I don't like that there are lobbyists involved at all. But the larger point is this. What Alex is saying is complete bullshit. Trump is absolutely hiring lobbyists. He has, you know, Alex can pretend that, oh, some bad apples got in and Trump hired them and then they went rogue and became lobbyists. That's just such bullshit.
It's in the fucking transcript that, oh my God.
It's just bullshit.
Just say that he's corrupt and that you like it, for God's sake.
Yeah, why not?
It doesn't matter. Everybody's still going to think he's fucking the president of God or whatever.
Yeah.
Just say he's a corrupt piece of shit.
He's a corrupt God.
You like making him a shit ton of money off his fucking hotels.
I worship the corrupt God.
Yeah, that's what you want.
So,
quit with your Christianity bullshit.
In line with demonizing Antifa and what have you, he's now making it so he's predicting at the Joker, the movie, the premieres.
Sure.
Antifa are going to shoot up a bunch of people and they're going to blame Alex.
That's
for
the
it.
Thing they do, right?
Mm.
And hitting theaters this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. The Joker, about a guy living in his mom's basement who's the leftist, washed up comedian. Who goes out and commits mass shootings and bombings and all the rest of it. And I told you, it's Taylor funded to trigger mass shootings. And 2 weeks after I did a
Taylor
big report
funded?
On it, the Pentagon came out and said, we've got intel that there are groups planning organized mass shootings dressed as Jokers.
Real quick, that's not what the warning said at all.
No,
this is a complete misrepresentation of that.
Antifa folks knows how to false flag. And they've got mentally ill methods ready to do it. And they're loading their social media with Trump and Alex Jones support right now. And they're going to march into those movie theaters and they're going to gun people down and they're going to blame you, the gun owner. It's coming. It's coming.
All I hear there is Alex is terrified that someone is going to shoot people at a Joker screening and they are going to be one of his fans.
They're
going to
have an
Alex
sticker.
Is fucking terrified of that, to the extent that he's creating a narrative in advance that Antifa is doing this. And right now, as we speak, they're faking their social media profiles to make it look like they're fans
of
Alex.
And you know what? Actually, they have been faking it for as long as they are have been on social media, by the way. So in case you find a post from them that's like, I don't know, 30 years, that's like at the beginning of
30
Facebook. A tweet from 30 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Saved by the Bell is great.
An op-ed from 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Even if you find that, that was all a plant, Dan.
Right.
It definitely is something that's made up.
That's all I hear there.
Yeah.
It's preemptive damage control, because I think Alex is keenly aware that the people who are more likely to commit an act like that
perhaps
are also
likely.
More likely to be aligned with him and be a fan.
Oh, yeah.
So good luck, Alex. I hope that there isn't any, I think that a lot of this is probably overblown.
Yeah.
There probably won't be any, problems with those premieres.
Right.
I think that, I don't know. Anyway, Alex believes that, movies and TVs are, this is a fucking elaborate conspiracy he's got here. I don't even know how to set up this clip, but.
They know exactly what they're doing. They know in all the studies that when you hype mass shootings, it causes mentally ill people to go out and commit mass shootings. And they know these are all trench coat wearing, white male, incel, devil worshipers that can't get a girl. Texas, the last three times, trench coat, devil worshipers can't get a girl. Ohio, trench coat, devil worshiper can't get a girl. Florida, Parkland, trench coat, devil worshiper can't get a girl. Sandy Hook, trench coat, devil worshiper can't get a girl. Harris and Kleibold, the original beta test, trench coat, incel, devil worshiper can't get a girl. And then the media hypes it and hypes it until it becomes an option. Don't commit suicide. Don't have suicide by cop. Don't jump off a bridge. Go kill people at a school. They're disarmed. And the demon in them directs them to do it. And then disarm the American people so the Red Terror can have its way with us in a full, long, protracted civil war where America finally has its will broken. Not going to happen. Because we've got the jump on you. We've got the jump on you, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to defeat the globalists together. We're going to go to break, come back with some good news about everything they're doing falling on their face, their minions being exposed from Trudeau to Thunberg, and then we'll take your phone calls. But this is the big push by the globalists. This is the big fight. This is history. Please don't forget.
There
we don't have globalist or Soros funding.
Nope.
We're funded by listeners, viewers like you.
Smooth ad pivot.
Yep.
So if you follow that, the theory is that movies and TVs are TV shows are hyping this sort of thing in order to precipitate shootings that are actually false flags in order to take away Alex's guns, which will trigger a civil war so the Chinese can take over.
Man, I'm telling you, the globalists really got to change their strategy, because we're on how many fucking mass shootings in...
This is like a game of mousetrap in Alex's mind. This is absurd. Rube Goldberg-ass brain.
Yep.
Get out of here. So anyway, Alex, if there's anything that's as close to funny as we're going to get, Alex goes to the coffee room during the break, and he has a realization.
Oh, God, no.
I was down in the break room getting a little cup of coffee during the break, and I just was standing there waiting for the coffee to finish making because somebody started a new pot, and I psychoanalyzed myself that I was just very angry.
Oh my God.
And I just had to say to myself, listen, you're doing the best job you can.
What is happening?
But then I really sat back and said, no, you're not. We need to have people take action. And we need to develop a plan of how to take action.
Go to the streets?
And we need to all really do it. That means I need to scan the internet to find out when Democrats are coming to Austin or San Antonio or Dallas or Houston. Democrat candidates. And I need to go to those events and I need to let the Democrats go crazy and make a big scene and have my talking points go viral.
Yeah, no shit. Why haven't you been doing that already? Like, what? His realization, first of all, is hilarious that he's angry. We know.
He's angry.
Yeah. And then he reassures himself that he's doing the best he can and then realizes, I am not.
He's not doing the best he can. That's the first true thing he said on this episode, Dan.
I've had no idea when Democrats have come around the area and I could have gotten cheap publicity by going out and bullhorning them. Why the fuck have I not done that? All this is just about...
He got soft, Dan. That's what he's noticing. That's what he's realizing. He's gotten soft.
Back when I was a young man, I would bullhorn anybody. At the drop of a hat,
anywhere.
I would bullhorn the shit out of people because I was hungry for publicity and attention.
I needed it.
But then it just became so easy. I grew this empire and everybody was paying attention to me in all the wrong ways. And I didn't need to do publicity stunts in order to get attention. But now I do. Alex, you are not doing a good enough job. You have to
get back
Google.
To your roots.
You have to
get
Google.
Back to your roots.
You have to do the very basic minimum thing of knowing when your enemies are going to be in your state.
That is why we cannot have right-wing people govern. Because they're so good at drilling you up with, like, the problem is this, and this is a problem, and we need to stop this problem. And then when you get down to the solution, they're like, we could Google it? Does that help?
Right.
I don't have any solutions. No, My job is not solutions.
We already
man.
Fucking saw that on the Sunday episode. His big solution that he has butterflies to
God,
tell people is
so
yell
funny.
Conspiracy theories.
Ah, get him!
Great. So Alex decides that he's going to take calls for pretty much the rest of this episode on the 30th because he wants to know what his audience thinks we should do, which is usually a bad sign.
Yeah.
But here's how he sets that up.
We're going to go to break, I promise, and come back with Javon and Brandon and Josh and Lillian and Frank and Jack and Kirby and Kim and Peter and
Jack
Luke.
Kirby?
I'm just going to move the person and move the next. What do you think about their move to impeach Trump? Are they going to try to kill him? What should we do to counter this? Because I don't want to just sit here like a spectator while history's happening. Don't just go to live Democratic events and legally and lawfully take them over in a peaceful
legally
way.
Legally and lawfully. Take them over?
What else are you going to do? You going to pay for airplanes to drag messages around towns and cities?
Great idea.
We've got to get the message out that we know the corporate media is a bunch of liars and this country isn't a civil war, but the people running this civil war are anti-Americans that say our country shouldn't even exist and our president's bad for saying it should even exist. But what are your other ideas? What do we do now to not be spectators? Before this gets pushed into a physical civil war and we wish we would have worked back when we had a chance to fix things peacefully.
Here's the problem The problem with any of this is I want to take suggestions from my callers about things like flying banners at planes and stuff. How do we stop this before it becomes a physical civil war? When earlier in this episode, he already clearly articulated that it's inevitable.
Well, yeah.
So why are you taking calls on what we can do to stop what I've already determined is a necessary outcome?
Because you gotta try, Dan. It's your God-given American duty to at least give it a shot. You gotta try. It's like the opening of The Wire, man. Why do you let him play? This is America. You gotta try.
I think that this is stupid. I think this is nonsense.
Oh, it's
everything
insane.
That he's putting forth is leading you to the ultimate conclusion that there's going to be millions dead in a shooting war here in America. And so what do we do to stop it? I don't know. Let's go.
Yell my slogans.
Get me more press.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Right. They're those sorts of things that are self-serving, and I'm sure Alex wants that message to be distributed.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But all of that is, like, it's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Like, he has said the ship is going down.
Well, I think it's almost like he's like, well, we got to have something to do before the Civil War actually starts. Like, we're really, like, it's taking so long!
The best case scenario of what he's asking for is, like, how do we recruit more people on our side to kill people?
Absolutely.
That's kind of all he's doing. But again, legal and lawfully.
Legally and lawfully take over the entire Democratic. Hey, if Bernie is giving a speech in your town,
legally
you need
and
to
lawfully
legally
take
and lawfully
over.
Take over that 10,000 person rally.
I mean, I guess what he's just saying is like detract attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Just
but again,
be a public dick. Be yeah. a fucking streaking is what he's advocating.
More or less. But what he's saying here, I mean, he just keeps repeating it.
But I'm going to open the phones up now. What do you think we should do? How do we strike back legally and lawfully? You know they're winding up more mass shootings to blame us. You know they're getting ready to bomb buildings and blame it on us.
That's to excuse the the likely outcome of the rhetoric that he's putting into the world, which is shootings and bombings.
Right.
They're planning to do that to blame us. But, hey, you can't blame me for that because I keep saying legally and lawfully.
Yep.
As if I have some reason to believe that my audience is inclined towards non-legal and non-lawful behaviors.
Yep.
That's all that's going on here. He's keenly aware.
Yeah, that's such the, like, hey, while you're in the shower, I'm not going to read your diary. Like, wait, what?
No, this is the, I'm going to murder you politically.
No, I mean, like, the legally and lawfully. Sure. You wouldn't think that you have to say legally and lawfully in the same way you wouldn't be like, why did you need to say you weren't going to read
right.
my diary?
You're indicating. You
know? Exactly.
You're indicating an awareness that your audience is a bunch of fucking weirdos.
Right.
So all this is sort of predicated on the idea that the globalists are that squid that's panicking and
sure.
is going to kill everybody.
Sure.
And the reason that the squid is panicking, Alex has a theory about this, and it's not a good one.
We need to get Trump to do more televised address, not just little two-minute things or minute-long things or 45-second-long things from the Rose Garden. He needs to absolutely let the globalists know that we're taking action. And you know what he is? They wouldn't be saying, oh, Barr's a traitor. He's compromised. The attorney general must step down if they didn't know the indictments are coming. Trump did it. He didn't blink. The indictments are there. It's confirmed. They don't have the deputy attorney general say no to stopping prosecution unless they've greenlit it. It's done. You want somebody to take action? He's doing it. And he's got all these cowards under him that are scared to implement it. All these people surrounding him, lying, leaking, blocking. Surprised he get anything done. All he can do is put the info out, be stalwart, and stand while he's surrounded, just like InfoWars.
This is far too complicated to get all the way into, and it's a load of shit. But basically, Alex's belief is that there are a ton of indictments on all these globalists
that are just
waiting to go out.
That's the Q stuff, right?
You bet.
Yeah.
Alex is now co-opting QAnon stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
Trump is Q or whatever it is they're doing.
Which is actually, I mean, like, strategically is a good move on Alex's part.
Absolutely.
But they already hate him. QAnon already hates Alex.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think he's going to be able to, like, take over that space, even though, as we've seen, they're kind of losing it without their guide.
Yeah.
Without having Q to give directions and such. It's kind of, a lot of the followers are kind of lost without a shepherd.
Right.
And Alex could step into that role if they didn't already hate him.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gonna work.
That is funny how so many people who would describe themselves as rugged individualists are suddenly at a loss for what to do the moment a fictional being no longer gives them fucking
I don't have
orders.
Posts on a message board to tell me what to Google anymore. Oh no. So Alex, like, but it, I think the most important piece is that Alex is just like on QAnon level in terms of this, like, there are all these indictments waiting to go and that's why they're panicking and that's why blah, 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 blah.
It's sad. And the most Q thing you can believe is that Trump should give more public addresses.
Right.
That's like, you actually think that everybody around Trump is doing everything possible to keep him away from TV. Because it's going to be like the end of fucking Iron Man where he's going to sit down at the podium and just be like, I did it. Whatever.
I think.
Stop me.
I think a lot of Trump's enemies would like him to do more
press
conferences
Please, too. Yeah. Please admit to crimes. You're going to.
Yeah. So Alex gets to these calls and he wants to find out some solutions and here's one of them.
I just want to thank you for waking me up. I do want to plug the products, but I honestly think the best thing that anyone can do right now in this sort of hysterical situation is get a Trump T-shirt, get a hat, go out there and represent, no matter where you're going.
I totally agree.
Even if you're going downstairs. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
Alex is eating. You can hear, he has a mouthful of something while he says, go ahead. But also, so the solution is just wear Trump merch.
Yeah.
Cool.
he wants to both plug Alex's products, but also he wants to let everybody know to buy Trump merch.
Yeah, I mean, all right.
And that is absolutely not a corrupt god that we are worshiping at all if our best way to support him is to purchase things that personally enrich him. That is not corrupt whatsoever. Our god that we worship.
Hey, leaving that aside for a second, like, that's your suggestion?
Yeah.
Clothes?
Yeah.
You are not doing it, man.
No, that's it. Look, it got Pepsi famous,
How are we going to avert the Civil War? Hats.
Hats. Do it.
Okay. So we've got screaming conspiracy theories at Democrats.
Yeah.
Alex Googling more and bullhorning people, I guess. Right. And hats.
Yes.
Awesome.
The right is not just getting good at comedy, Dad. They're good at
organizing. So, Alex, the hat thing is kind of like, I guess you could be overly generous to that suggestion and be like, well, what that would do is show Congress that there is rampant support for Trump because of all the hats.
That is being overly generous, yes.
You could say that because, Alex, I think that he believes that that would solve an essential problem that he has, and that is that Congress is too weak.
Congress, on average, are a bunch of cowards. Jim Jordan's great. Nunes is amazing. A lot of those guys are great, but there's not that many of them. And, you know, the Democrats sent a Bernie supporter to try to kill them all at a baseball game. Remember that?
Really? Really?
But there was one security officer there with a gun who shot the shooter in 1 second. The guy opened up, shot Scalise in the hip through the guts, and was down within 1 second. If that wouldn't have happened, they could have killed a lot of those members. Don't think they won't fly a plane into the Capitol. Don't think they won't blow up a Republican train when they're going to one of their yearly retreats. Remember last year it got blown up? And the news just said, oh, the train got stopped. No, the tracks got blown up.
So here's a small point. The shooter who attacked the baseball practice was not stopped in 1 second. There was an approximately 10-minute shootout with him before he was taken down. Alex is completely making that up. And in the process of that shootout, he also shot a police officer, a congressional aide, and a lobbyist, who by Alex's definition probably had no business being at a congressional baseball practice, but oh well. None of the people that Alex names were at that practice, like Jim Jordan. And the only person who was there that Alex has a lot of love for is someone he doesn't really champion anymore, and that's Rand Paul. Jeff Flake was also there, but Alex really doesn't like that dude. What is true is that the perpetrator of that crime was a left-wing extremist. It's kind of illuminating, though, to see the different responses and the way people handled that news. Of particular note was how Bernie Sanders responded to news that the man had volunteered for his 2016 campaign.
He said that there were bad people on both sides, right? That's what he said.
This
he
is
said
the globalist that, setting me
he
up.
He said that they that
it's a false
actually,
flag.
It was actually a false. Yeah, that must have been it, right?
No.
They were blaming it on the leftists.
Quote, I have just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I'm sickened by this despicable act. Let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Real change can only come through nonviolent action, and anything else runs counter to our most deeply held American values. There's no attempt to pretend that the dude didn't work on his campaign. There's no attempt to say that it's a plot to make him look bad. I find it hard to believe that Alex would respond similarly if, I don't know, let's say a couple of his listeners ended up killing three people in Las Vegas back in 2014. Nope. Alex thought that was a false flag.
Yeah, to make
him look bad.
Yeah.
Also, Alex thinks that the shooting of Gabrielle Giffords was a false flag meant to take away his guns. So I don't think he has any fucking ground to stand on with this bullshit.
Yeah.
As for that train situation, Alex is a real piece of shit. What happened there was that on January 31st, 2018, a train carrying a bunch of Republican Congress members was en route to a retreat in West Virginia when it collided with a trash truck. No one on the train was seriously injured, but Alex seems to forget that one person who was in that truck that was hit was killed. For someone who seems to pretend to care about humans so much, seems to forget about a lot of them. All the other people who were shot at the baseball field, this guy who died in the truck.
Yep.
The National Transportation Safety Board conducted a full investigation of that incident and decided that what had happened was that the truck's driver tried to go around the lowered safety gates to cross the railroad thinking there wasn't a train coming. And they believed, based on a minute-by-minute breakdown of the event, that it tended to indicate that the driver was impaired. This was a tragic accident, which was immediately transformed into they're trying to kill the GOP as a narrative really quickly. There was ultimately no truth to that at all. Alex's narrative is particularly stupid because there's tons of pictures of the aftermath of the accident, and they've been published. You can see that the train is still on the tracks after the collision. It would be so easy to produce evidence if the tracks had been blown up, and there's no evidence of that at all. There's plenty of evidence that defends the version of the story that I have just told you. The only thing backing up Alex's version is Alex said it.
Yeah.
There is nothing true to this at all.
Well, he may have screenshots from a video game that would prove his point.
Yeah,
or perhaps he has some Snidely Whiplash little action going on there.
It's possible.
Yeah.
So Alex gets back to his big plan to go yell at Democrats.
Sure.
And I'm going to be going out and confronting these people. But I can't get up close like you can. And just simply hit them with whatever their corruption is.
What?
Every Democratic candidate, every operative, every live show. Get in there. Take them over. It's legal. It's lawful.
What?
He has to keep saying legal and lawful in order to be like, I did not want to say that.
Yep.
But when you're saying it like this, I'm going to go out and I'm going to confront these people, but you can get closer to them.
Yep.
That's fucked up.
That's fucked up.
Because what is, why is proximity?
And hit them with their corruption.
Why is proximity important if you're just yelling conspiracy theories at a rally?
Well, because you got to hit them with their corruption.
Why is proximity important? It's not important at all.
Because you need to hit them with their corruption.
This is such bullshit.
You need
bullshit.
To hit them.
This is such
corruption.
Bullshit, Jordan. This
you
is
need
like
to hit them.
This
with
is
corruption.
Bullshit.
Yep.
That's
bananas. The twin fucking turbines of they're going to do a mass attack and blame it on us, combined with the you need to protest legally and lawfully, to back to they're going to false flag us and blame it on us to take our guns, right back to do this but legally and lawfully, is such a consistent, like, I am doing everything in my power to have documented evidence that
yes.
I tried
yeah.
to not get this shit killed.
Absolutely.
You know, to not do this.
It's
it
you
is
know,
astonishing.
Sometimes you watch wrestling, let's say. You're watching a WWE event and there's a bad match, but you can tell from the way they're shooting it that it's clear that this match, the optics of it, are meant to be played in a sizzle reel for something later.
So there's
some image that's meant to be iconic within this, even though the actual match is bad.
It's not good. Right.
That's what I hear here when he keeps saying legally and lawfully over and over and over again. That's for to defend InfoWars and the off chance that someone gets up close at one of these rallies
and
does
hits
something.
Someone with their corruption.
Right. It does feel that way. And it's particularly important that I keep driving home this point that Alex is expressing that war is inevitable.
Uh-huh.
A civil war is inevitable.
Yep.
This is not business as usual. This is not status quo. It's 100% chance there's going to be a bloody civil war.
What?
And it's going to be dirty.
100%?
They're going to false flag and do massacres you've never even imagined and blame it on us. And it's
going
to test the very metal
of
this country. So we're up to the edge of the cliff right now, and if you don't feel it, there's something wrong with you. Let me tell you, folks, people better get on their knees and pray, and then you better hit the streets and get active. And I mean get real active and real aggressive.
Doing what?
God.
Doing
is,
what?
This is so fucking, like this is too much to the point of, like, does he know something? Like, that's how fucking repetitive
I know.
And
I know.
I'm not implying
no.
that he knows something, but it's like, you can't hear him say that and be so like,
the
they're
going
to do all of this stuff.
The
then
thought,
I know
the
what they're going
to
do. And it's
impossible
like,
to get
how,
away from, but it's irrational.
Something?
Yeah. It does feel that way. And I think that part of it's so suspicious is the thing.
So suspicious.
It doesn't indicate anything like he knows something's coming or anything like that, but it's just fucking insane how consistent this is and how weird. Like it just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he knows something, but I think if you don't think for a second, what if he does, you're irrational.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's such a reasonable thought. It's such a reasonable thought. It's probably not true.
No, it's 100% not true.
But you think about it, and you're like, eh.
What it actually, I think, illustrates and demonstrates is that Alex is smart enough to understand that the trends in the actual world are lining up and dovetailing with his rhetoric in such a way that it's very likely that someone is going to do something fucked up.
Yep.
And so this is preemptive damage control for on the off chance that someone does. Now, hopefully no one does, but Alex needs this in order to protect InfoWars as a business, as an entity.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing here, while at the same time continuing on in the same path that makes these sorts of things, these tragedies, more likely. It's completely irresponsible. It's absolutely disgusting. But I don't know if it's illegal.
Now,
it should
I'm
be,
not
probably.
Going to. I'm not. I know. And you're. I'm more than happy for the pushback that I'm going to receive on this. And don't think that I think this is a true thing. But there is a part of me that hears him go on those like when he's saying, "Get out into the streets, hit them, get up close, hit them." All of that stuff, almost, it's like, it feels like he wants somebody to do something.
No,
because if they do, then he's gonna get a lot of publicity. To me, I don't want to believe that he's that much of a psychopath. So I don't think that he would do that on purpose. But it really does seem like if somebody did fucking do something and they've got an InfoWars sticker, then InfoWars is going to be all over the fucking news, and he already has the legal and lawful defense prepared.
Right.
I'm not saying that he's going to do that.
Well, you already...
I don't think there's any way that he's trying to do that.
Well, on our last episode, when we were talking about the day of the Boston bombing, we heard him be like, "Oh, I hope they don't blame me." Wink, wink, wink.
Yep.
So I don't know.
I don't think he would do that. I don't want to believe he would do that. I don't want to believe that he would. And I'm not saying he's doing it. And I don't want to believe that he would ever do it consciously. And so I won't. I don't believe it. There we go. I've talked myself through it.
Well, one of the issues that comes up, I think, is that he's framing things so inconsistently. Like you expressed, the jostling back and forth between, they're gonna false flag us, legally and lawfully, and I think it's embodied by this next clip.
It's a weird feeling because I know how bad these people are, and I'm really mad at myself for not fighting hard enough and not doing enough. I mean, we're dealing with absolute pure evil, and the way we've all just been desensitized and put into this comfort zone to live right next to it. And then, quite frankly, I think about other options than InfoWar. And on every path with the brainwashing they've run, that'll only turn out against us, even though it's spiritually right at this point to physically remove these people from power.
What?
Yeah. I don't know how you can say things like that.
Oh, wow.
It's spiritually right to start committing violence against these people because they're so terrible.
Yeah.
But because they've brainwashed everyone so much, if you do that, it's going to be bad strategy.
Yeah.
That's a completely irresponsible, unacceptable thing for Alex Jones to be pushing for. So he goes to the calls. I mean, I feel like that can just leave. You don't need to comment on that too much. That's fucked up on its face. So he goes to calls again, and he gets a caller who brings up the Remnant, which is sort of Christian identity code for the people who will be left after there's like a big culling on the earth.
So not the Revenant, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Thomas Hardy.
It is not that. The Remnant.
An absolutely great role by
there. The second season of Bundyville, that podcast, is a really, if you want to explainer on the remnant
ideas.
The
Remnant is like the people who are going to be left over after the massive,
Yeah. And so this caller brings that up. If you understand that stuff, you can hear the code and the discussion that's going on that level. And then she has a solution for what people should do, and it's stupid.
Also know that Christ said, God said that it would be a remnant that would be sold out to him. But that's okay because he only needs a remnant that will stand up to this evil. This evil has been, this deception has been going on since the beginning of the time, starting with Cain and it will continue until Jesus comes back again. And so my suggestion of how we can really make a difference in fighting this war is if every single person that is a regular listener to your show would commit to give just $5 a month faithfully every month until this thing is over. And again, it's not going to be over until Jesus comes again. But if they would commit to just giving $5 a month, let's say there's 2 million of us faithful listeners out there. If you multiply $5 times 2 million, that would be $10 million a month that Alex would be getting in that he could count on.
Well, I promise this. If we get $10 million a month, there won't be any private jets. I'll be flying coach. I could absolutely change history with $10 million a month.
So her suggestion is just give Alex a shit ton of money.
That's a plant. That's somebody's family. You know what? That's somebody that works there. That's a plant.
I really don't like to jump around on episodes, but I honestly feel the same way.
Yeah.
And here's why. Cause later in the episode, he gets another call from another religious weirdo who has another suggestion of how to deal with the coming crisis.
Alex, you're a modern day Apostle Paul. You're fighting the same fight he fought. You understand, as he did, our real enemy. You always, every show, you mention our God and Savior and Jesus Christ as our only solution. You're obligated, Alex, to ask for contributions that would be graciously given. If you would set up an organized way so that we, your listeners, millions of Christians around the world,
Jesus
Christ, those that are conservative, we would support you.
So there seems to be a real trend in these callers that are calling in of religiously basing giving Alex tons of money.
Yeah.
And that seems strange to me.
He's getting in on that televangelist money, baby.
It does seem strange to me that there are, he doesn't take many calls because he never does. And two of them are overtly religious extremists who are calling in, and their main suggestion, one of them is millions of Christians should give you money, and the other one is a more concrete, all of your listeners should give you $5 a month, so you have $10 million a month.
Yep.
Like, it really seems, like, I'm not saying that they're plants.
They're plants.
Obviously.
They are fucking plants.
You can't prove it.
I can't prove it. I can't prove it.
But it's weird.
I cannot prove it.
It's weird.
But they're fucking plants. That's fucking, come on.
It's strange.
No televangelist has their own fucking followers being like, and you, well, actually, they probably all do. Who fucking knows? These people are insane.
So that second caller, he goes on to say some other stuff. And I think it's interesting.
I know Christians will be victorious, and that's why you need us behind you. We need to be giving to your efforts on a monthly basis, a commitment.
A monthly basis.
A commitment to your ministry.
Is that your dad?
And we will definitely defeat Satan and his armies. We've got the bigger army. We've got the bigger stick. His name is Jesus Christ. And I might throw Donald Trump in there along with him.
Jeez.
Those two guys can't be defeated.
So Trump is on the level of Jesus somehow.
Jesus and Trump can't be defeated.
Which is sacrilegious.
That's incredibly sacrilegious.
I really don't think that somebody who was sincerely devout in their religion would say something like that.
Yeah.
And then also the monthly thing coming back up in that second caller. Yeah. It seems like Alex might be trying to launch like a Patreon clone or something like that.
Something like that.
Or maybe he's trying to push people to a Subscribestar, which as we know is not doing well.
What they
don't realize is there is a way to do this already. And Alex has talked about it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. If all the Christians in the world wanted to go and give $5 a month to Alex's Subscribestar, they could do it now.
Yep.
And they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Because millions of Christians aren't listening to his show because he is outrageously sacrilegious on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And would offend anyone who takes their faith seriously.
Well, I mean, again, though, televangelists do what they do, so I don't think millions of Christians really...
They're a little smoother.
Give a shit. Well, fair. Fair. Fair.
I would argue that they also, most of them, Jim Baker not included, don't have as much baggage.
No, that's
Jim Baker has somehow transcended his crimes.
And he's very similar to Jesus. He did rise again.
Yeah. So I just think, like,
after being kept in a hole, he was kept in solitary confinement, you know. There you go.
Fucking a mess. And I don't know. I hate to extend into things that I can't really even look into, even if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I do have a strong suspicion that both of those callers are not real callers.
Absolutely.
I think that when Alex is getting on air and he's talking about solutions and how do we avert this civil war, the idea that two people would be overt religious weirdos and they would both come up with the idea of monthly donations for Alex, which already exists, it seems strange to me. And I find it too suspicious to consider definitely real.
Yeah.
So Alex has an interview with Andrew Torba, who is the guy who made Gab.
Oh, okay.
Which is great. Anyway, the two of them have a little bit of a bull session about how Gab is now going to launch its own Google, their own
Gabble.
The right.
Yeah.
I think it's called Who Cares?
Yeah.
But they have a little conversation, and I don't really care, but they say one thing in it that I think is worth pointing out, and it's this.
You know, a lot of these things, this is scary, right? We have New York City this week coming out and saying you're going to get fined $250,000 if you call someone an illegal alien, if you ask them to
speak
English.
And by the way, I totally forgot to cover that the last 3 days, and I went and read it. I thought, oh, this is a fake headline. It says if our hate board of leftists decide in any way, and they gave examples, if you kick illegals out because they didn't pay the rent, $250,000 fine. I mean, this is like the Soviet Union.
So this is a classic trick that's always played by aspiring fascists who pretend to be free speech activists.
Yeah, they do great with this.
They always misrepresent situations where vulnerable communities are provided with protections and portray them as creeping moves where the state will punish you, a private citizen, if you dare breach their guidelines about political correctness.
And in this circumstance, an actual citizen, man. An actual one.
So this is something that was done aggressively in terms of motions that were made to protect LGBTQ folk, notably the 2015 human rights guidelines released in New York and Canada's Bill C-16 of 2017. They were constantly decried by right-wing scam artists as being about a ploy to lock you up if you dared use the wrong gender pronoun. Trans and non-binary people would immediately become overpowered beings who, if you offended in any way, they would send you to prison or the poorhouse. In reality, the Canada Bill was about housing and employment discrimination and added gender identity and expression into the category of things you're not allowed to discriminate on in terms of public services.
But I want to discriminate!
This is the same thing with the New York guidelines. They were about workplace discrimination and protecting LGBTQ individuals from being the target of unsafe working conditions. Now, here we have Alex, a noted promoter of white identity beliefs, and Andrew Torba, the owner of Gab, which is the place where bigots and Nazis go when they get kicked off normal platforms, talking about how New York has introduced $250,000 fines if you call someone an illegal alien. What do you think this story is really about, Jordan?
Well, they did mention if you, kick them out of their place because they didn't pay rent. Mm. So I'm gonna go with, if you give up anybody who is an illegal immigrant and kick them out of their place, if you're a fucking slumlord like that.
I mean, more or less.
Is it giving people over to ICE? Like, you can't literally hand your fucking neighbor over to ICE.
It's about workplace housing and public accommodation discrimination.
Yeah.
The new guidelines laid out by the New York Commission on Human Rights mostly has to do with how, if you're in a position like you're an employee or a landlord, you can't treat someone differently because you assume they might be an immigrant. For instance, you can't ask if they're a legal resident because they have an accent, unless you ask everyone who doesn't have an accent the same question. The same goes for discrimination based on English proficiency or anything any kind of stereotyping you might have non-American natives or whatever.
How do you feel about me saying racial slurs?
That's probably fine if you're a private citizen.
You're against it? Get the fuck out of here.
I mean, it's already against the law if you're an employer to do that. Like,
I know, no, I was,
right, I know.
That was the question that, you would ask somebody and they'd be like, I don't like it. And you're like, ha ha, you're an illegal immigrant.
The document also clarifies that, quote, the use of the terms illegal alien and illegals with the intent to demean, humiliate, or offend a person or persons in the workplace amounts to unlawful discrimination. because of course it does.
Right, right, right.
In terms of the housing portion, nothing Alex is saying is real at all. These guidelines don't say in any way that you can't evict an undocumented immigrant even if they don't pay rent. That's
sure
bullshit.
That sure does seem like it would go in the face of literally everything I've ever known about anything.
Right. Alex is trying to create the perception that people like undocumented immigrants are above the normal rules that his brave and noble white friends are subjected to, because it helps to feed his victimhood complex, without which he wouldn't have ever made a dime on this show. The guidelines clearly lay out ways that tenants of any documentation status or nation of origin can be evicted. If you're a landlord, you just can't try to evict someone by intimidation, for instance, by threatening to call ICE. This extends to ignoring tenant complaints or attempting to intimidate tenants into not complaining about property issues by implying or threatening to call ICE on them. Here's how I know that Alex and Torba are gigantic bigots. If they weren't, they would be discussing these guidelines as they actually exist, instead of trying to create straw men to attack. They know they can't do that, though, because to oppose these guidelines is to advocate that employers and landlords should be able to demean their employees and create abusive working environments just because they think they're undocumented immigrants. They would have to advocate for legitimate systemic racism and xenophobia, where if you weren't a white person, you just had to suck it up and live with whatever shit people in positions of authority did to you. And here's the thing. They do want to advocate for that. It's the situation they want to have in the world, but they're smart enough to know that if they came out and made those arguments sincerely, they'd run the risk of being seen clearly. And then this whole facade of free speech disappears, and donations from non-racists completely dry up.
I was going to say, if we want to take the lawsuits that Alex's own former employees have sent against him regarding his treatment of them, is like, yeah, he does want to be able to threaten and bully people with whatever bullshit he wants to.
And create unsafe working environments
for minorities and women, yeah.
So what they do is they try to find a way to attack these guidelines without making it look like they really just want non-white people to have no protections in society. They create the straw man that this is about destroying free speech, and if you, some random white man on the street, call someone an illegal alien, you'll be fined $250,000.
But I'm a white man!
And just like that, they can turn their audience's opinion against these human rights protections without having to say why they really take issue with them. This is one of the very elementary tricks Alex does all the time, and it's often appealing to pretend that he's just stupid and he doesn't know what he's talking about, he hasn't read the statute, blah, blah, blah. But this pattern is too consistent. He knows what he's doing, and what he's doing is whitewashing attempts to attack societal protections against systemic harassment and abuse of non-white persons. And he can go fuck himself.
Yep.
This is all just coded white supremacy that he is expressing. So, bleh. In this next clip.
Yeah.
We get back to the violence-nonviolence dichotomy that Alex is putting forth on this episode.
These people know we're kicking their ass and they want full control for authoritarianism. You think stuff's bad now? I'm physically in total fight mode. I'm not going to do anything physical, but intellectually, my brain has done the math. I've looked at it and I can't help my brain now not going into combat mode. Doesn't mean I'm going to do anything. I'm not. They're starting combat mode because they're losing the info war. But I'm here to tell you, folks, I've been on air 25 years, and you could take 25 of the years. They doesn't compete with what's happening now energetically. Woo! I mean.
That clip was 35 seconds long, and twice he had to make clear, I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
That's not a good sign.
Nah.
That means there's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a complete admission that your show has a problem. And that is that if you don't say twice in 35 seconds, I'm not going to do anything, people are probably going to assume you're saying you're going to do something.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah. That's called a reputation.
This show is bad even by Alex's own behavior, that it implies an awareness that this show is bad.
Yep.
So Alex and Andrew, Torba, they get to talking about how people who are against racism are actually the racist ones.
Yeah.
You know, some of the people that project, anti-racism or social justice, ironically end up being the most racist people.
Oh, I never heard the N-word until I was in college. And then I went on road trips. And Northerners are great. Most wonderful people. But I mean, that's when I heard N-word and stuff was in the North. And I mean, people think the South, get your ass killed doing that, man. I mean, people don't play games down here. I mean, I never heard anybody talk bad about black people. I mean, you know, because we're Christians and we don't put people down to make ourselves bigger. And it's just this idea that the South's a bunch of racists is a load of crap.
I mean, it's fair that maybe some people are definitely far too stereotyping of Southern people and also far too stereotyping the other direction of people in the North.
Right.
I think that's a very fair point, although I do not believe for a fucking second the story that Alex is telling.
No. Not even a little bit.
I didn't hear the N-word until I went off to college, and it was Northerners.
Jesus.
Like, just, imagine him with, like...
what is he? He's sipping tea like around there. Yeah.
Oh, my word. I've never heard such language.
Oh, I nearly fainted at the sight.
I get the vapors when I hear someone say a racial slur.
Now I must prepare for my debutante ball. Crazy. I wish you good day.
Such bullshit.
I can't do a show without somebody coming up to me afterwards, looking both directions and being like, how do you feel about jokes like, and then insert minority, you know?
All this is in service of is trying to malign anybody who is against racism.
Yeah. Yep.
So congratulations.
Yep.
In the same way that if you're, you know, let's say aggressively anti-fascism,
yeah,
it implies that you might be pro-fascism.
I hate anti-fascists.
In the same way, if you're trying to make sport of demonizing people who are anti-racist, it implies that maybe you have a kinship with racists.
Yeah.
It doesn't prove it.
No.
But it implies it.
This is not a good Jeff Foxworthy bit.
No. And this next clip doesn't help any of the feelings that I'm having about these two dudes.
I mean, if you're a Christian, if you're a straight white male, if you're, someone who's off the plantation or the Democrat plantation or thinking for yourself, you're going to get attacked. You're going to get smeared. And we are the great oppressors. But, you know, the reality is that we're the ones that are speaking the truth, right? We're speaking truth to power and we're winning. And again, like I said earlier, we have God on our side. So no matter what happens, we can't lose. But
so that's pretty. White identity.
Dude, we've got Coach Taylor. Clear eyes. Full hearts.
Clear eyes, racist hearts. can't lose.
That's so fucking
that's
pathetic.
He's expressing that, you know, Christian, straight, white men, we're always painted as the oppressors, but we're the ones speaking truth and we're winning.
Right.
Cool. Good conception.
What we're actually mad about is that we have to deal with, not being, worshipped every single day. And it's like, oh, that's so hard.
And we have to.
I just want some slaves. And it's not like that big a deal.
And I have to spend all this time coming up with ways to argue against human rights protections for people and make it look like it's actually about oppressing me.
Yeah.
I think if you had like
white
real
men are
serious...
like the NCAA of racism. They're like, oh no, if you do anything, sure, we're making billions of dollars off of unpaid labor, but no, how dare you? It's all about we're the victim.
If you have real complaints, you wouldn't have to go out of your way to misrepresent this. This protection for folks in New York.
Yeah.
Like, you just wouldn't do stuff like that. You would spend your time on valid criticisms. You wouldn't misrepresent a Netflix movie. You wouldn't spend half of one of your shows talking about Bob Dylan selling his soul to the devil. You wouldn't misrepresent a Jack Dorsey tweet from 7 years ago about a fucking Salman Rushdie book. You wouldn't do any of this stuff if you had real complaints. This is all misrepresentation in service of justifying the victimhood status that you have, which only serves to justify why this inevitable civil war is coming and you're right for it.
Uh-huh.
That's all that's going on.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, in these last two clips that I have, I think that these are bad. And they're, again, coming back to this violence, nonviolence, back and forth. And I think that Alex is trying to convince people, whether he's making the argument clearly or not, that nonviolence is not an option.
I'm just so wound up right now. I know you are as well. This is it. They're coming. They're climbing over the damn parapet. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. It's not a question now. They're going to try to remove Trump. They're going to blow up federal buildings. They're going to do mass shootings. Okay? Just get ready. I guarantee you. It's all happening. Just get ready. And you can see it and you know it and there's no doubt about it. And I'm just going to tell everybody, if you climb under the bed, they're going to dig your ass out of there. We're going to ride out. We're going to face these people politically, and we're going to have victory, the likes of which we've never seen.
If you hide out, they're going to get you. You can't hide. You can't hide. There is no opting out.
Jesus.
Yeah. So he talks, he said that everyone's got to go to DC earlier in the show.
Yeah.
And so he gets back on that theme a little bit. And listen to some of this language here in this last clip, because I think it's just, bleh.
We have to swarm D.C., but instead of always swarming, you know, the mall and then nobody covers it, the halls of the Senate and the House, you go right through, you go right to their damn offices. Get in there and get in their faces in a legal and lawful way.
Again, it's just constant. Man. It's just constant.
Man.
He needs to constantly say, don't break any law. Guys, I'm serious. I know that everything I'm saying about how they're the literal devil they're going to try and kill, or not just try and kill us, they will commit extermination against the great, noble, white, Christian patriots of this country if left to their own devices. But I'm saying don't commit any crimes.
Yeah.
Everything I'm saying, my entire worldview, everything I'm screaming about leads you to the conclusion that these people must be destroyed politically.
I mean, that's, we're in literary device territory now, where it's like, you're, by turning legal and lawful into a refrain, you're turning it into a winking aside that you don't want legal and lawful activity.
I mean, that's an argument that you could make. I think
that goes back to interpreting pride and fucking prejudice.
I think that,
man, that's how language fucking works.
I think it's an interpretation that, you could pretty easily support.
I mean, he's no Jane Austen. That's true.
Certainly not. I think that there's all sorts of interpretations you could make of this, and none are very good. But, I mean, the bottom line of this is I don't think it's illegal, but like, one of the things that I feel so, like, I don't think that this is a good episode of our show even, because I think that there's so much like, on Alex's part, that I don't think that there's much to deconstruct outside of like, well, here's what he's saying.
Right.
At the same time, I think this is really important because what he's saying is leading towards a negative outcome.
Yeah.
So I hope nothing happens. I sincerely hope nothing happens that is a national tragedy. But should something happen, Alex, his entire career at this point in 2019 exists to normalize that, to make that more likely.
Yeah.
And he can say, do things in a legal and lawful way all he wants. It doesn't amount to a hill of beans, because the overriding piece and the overriding sense and the feel and the rhetoric, everything else, is a contradiction of that. He can say that to keep himself in legal safe territory or to defend himself should something bad happen. But it doesn't matter. That is not what his show is about. Legal and lawfully. Go and yell conspiracy theories at politicians. That's not what this is about. Yeah.
Now, the only reason this is legal is because of the vagueness of the English language.
Because and Brandenburg versus Ohio.
Well,
legal rulings that have said, like, abstract calls for crimes are not illegal.
Right. But this is, I don't know. This is just insane.
Yeah.
This is just insane.
And that's why I intend to usually stay away from, like, is this illegal? Because I think it's a pointless argument.
Yeah.
I think it's...
This should be illegal.
I agree with you there.
Specifically.
I agree with you.
I don't know about the larger, wider-reaching effects on the First Amendment, but if this specifically... Let's start with this.
I think that, it's an interesting discussion, and maybe the courts should take it up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a secondary argument to, is this ethical? And
yeah.
I think it's absolutely unethical.
Absolutely not.
And the only outcome of this can be making it more likely that terrible things will happen.
Right.
And so, I don't know. Fuck this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much, yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to do a Wacky Wednesday episode.
Yeah, you did it.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I want to do a Wacky Wednesday episode. I know it's been way too long since we talked about space weirdos and had something that was a little bit lighter and a break from this shit, because I think we definitely do need it. But it's such a bad timing of coincidence that these 2013 episodes are at this like really high tension point.
Yeah.
And at the same time, in 2019, we have just crazy bullshit going on. I promise we will get back to a more frequent breaks and diversions, but we just can't. There's,
you
like,
do realize this is returning back to territory wherein you are a witch, in that so often in the present day, we talk about something and then the past, it comes up, or vice versa. Currently, both in 2013, our investigation is coming to a head, and in 2019, the world's end is coming to a head. No, I know, but the crescendo of both is so.
Alex's rhetoric
so
feels
parallel.
Like it's coming
yeah.
to a head.
Yeah.
Certainly.
It's insane.
Yep. I don't know what to say about that.
You're a witch.
I'm not.
Admit to being a witch.
I'm not like Alex. I don't pretend to have the gift.
The second sight. Yeah. yeah.
But I do admit that we have a website, and we'll be back
on
Friday.
It's knowledgefight.com.
You're right. We're on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight. Correct. And @GoToBedJordan.
Yes, we're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. If you would like to download the show, please go to iTunes or wherever podcastual applications are found. Download the show, leave a review. We would love it.
Sure thing. Absolutely. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am time traveling Antifa.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.